Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 7, Episode 8, titled Hearts Still Beating. I think we all know what the title means. Kind of at the end, realize everybody's still got a heart in their chest, except for people who may or may not have it spill out of their torsos. And, you know, they're still resilient and resistant.
Much like The Walking Dead fan base.
Okay, yeah, that's a good comparison.
Our hearts are still beating.
Uh-huh. What do you think of this episode?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. And so some of it is because they have... I felt like this episode really accelerated the timeline. And where I was dreading that we were going to spend another half season with this kind of prelude to confronting Negan... You know, and of course, as soon as I get my hopes up, the show will then give us a three-part, single-focus episode or series of episodes on where Heath has been
right
next season, and this will all come crashing down to a halt. But I don't know. I mean, I've kind of got the hope that they're just going to step back and like maybe tell this this all-out war kind of plot line straight up. So I'm excited for the next half season.
Okay, I mean that. Seems appropriate. I think this episode was serviceable to good, and it certainly did a lot of things that I wanted to see, like Spencer getting killed was obviously the highlight, probably for both of us. But yeah, I definitely, you know, I don't want to get roped into the same old mode of thinking that Walking Dead gets you in, which is, hey, they're really going to get great next season. Next season is always the season for Walking Dead.
And yeah.
I'm sick of being fooled by it. I'm not going to be fooled. So I'm with you. Like, they will do the episode of Heath. They will do probably another episode of Tara, and they'll gloss over deaths, and they'll have all the same bullshit they had in this season.
And I'm not saying that, like, I think The Walking Dead will be great, but, you know, I think these last two episodes have been entertaining, mm-hmm. and you know, you've had Negan, like, he showed us. I think he showed another dimension to himself, like Negan, who's like, "Oh shit, I could have died right here. I've been so up my ass, and you know, I've been so invincible for so long, and you know, doing my bouncy Negan thing that like when Lucille got shot, he showed a whole different side of him that I thought was." Really kind of neat, and I liked seeing him, his more playful side, it actually worked, mm-hmm. than I was able to appreciate. So yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know if they'll pump on the brakes, but I don't need Walking Dead to be great. I need Walking Dead to be entertaining. There was still a lot of stupid shit in this episode,
yeah,
but there was humor, and there was drama, and there was, mm-hmm. you know, like Rick's realization to everyone in Alexandria was essentially an open rebellion, even his own child. Like, the way Andrew Lincoln played that was really good and entertaining.
Right.
And the gambit to get out to the houseboat was just stupid and crazy and over the top, but that's the kind of shit I guess I miss about Walking Dead.
Sure, I really enjoyed the boat stuff.
If you're not going to be great, then dangle Glenn in the well, knock Aaron off a canoe, like get me rolling my eyes and like exasperated, because that's where I guess I'm most comfortable with this show.
Okay, well, why don't we get into the recap?
All right, so we open up with Maggie on the wall. She's looking very Glenn. She's looking like she's playing a deliberate homage to the Glenn of old. Mm-hmm. You know, because he hasn't really rocked that look recently, but she's going back to old school season one Glenn look.
Just head to toe denim.
Yeah.
I mean, that was never really Glenn's signature look. He usually took a more toned down denim approach, mm-hmm. but Maggie's just going all out with the denim.
And Gregory walks up to her and says, you know, should you be climbing walls of that torn uterus of yours?
No, he doesn't say that. No one mentions that.
That would actually probably score him some political points. What he does say is that people have been saying a lot of nice things about you and Sasha saving us. Mm-hmm. Don't let it go to your head. And Maggie, like, this is great, because this is someone coming up with realistic, believable dialogue to just shut this smarmy piece of shit down. This is what I expect of a person like Maggie. She says, oh, well, don't let it bother you.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be bothering you.
Then I saw she got this kind of like impish grin, and she plays this, are you going to eat that apple? And Gregory's like shining up like, hell yeah, I'm going to eat this delicious apple. And the guard standing watch with Maggie says, dude, you know she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. And he is so he has to give her the apple, and then Maggie eats the apple with relish, and it's great.
Yeah,
not literally with relish. That'd be disgusting.
That would be real gross.
She's like, "This is the best goddamn apple I've ever had, Gregory." So look at the juice running down my chin. My baby appreciates his apple, Gregory. Thank you.
So at this point, is Gregory trying to avoid a full-on revolt against his leadership? Because I don't know why he hands over this apple. Like,
because he's weak. This is what a person who's weak that thinks a person strong does.
Okay.
And he essentially, once you recognize you're in this position where someone just outclasses you, they're just better at you for the job, the best thing you can do is fall behind their leadership, because you try to you buck it, you're going to get embarrassed. And
sure.
Gregory in this world of being embarrassed probably means your guts get torn out too.
Yeah, probably.
So
Maggie's guts have already been torn out though, so
yeah,
what does it matter?
That uterus is at, you know, red line still.
Yeah, and I just, no one is concerned about her fragile physical state. Not even, like, least of all her. And it just, I don't know what to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
How long has it been? Do we know? Has she, like, been in bed for 6 months?
No. We know for a fact that it's still been very, very, I mean, there's a timeline of just, I think, a week.
Yeah, it's very short.
Because Negan, they bashed her brains in, then less than a week later, they came and made their first visit, and now less than approximately a week later. So it's been about 2 weeks.
The entire last season, this season,
plus the last two episodes before that, have taken place in over a matter of like 2 weeks.
The thing, so I wouldn't care. If it was just Maggie, I would not care one bit. If she wants to rupture her womb for the sake of climbing a ladder and looking over a wall, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
But presumably she cares about this child. Like, it's the one thing she has left of Glenn.
Right.
And it's fine. Like, if the doctor was like, "Sure, yeah, you're good. Just do what you normally do." But he told you to fucking sit in bed.
Yes,
and do nothing.
Bed rest.
It's a doctor. It's not some rando. It's not some guy who doesn't know what he's talking about. It's a freaking doctor. Listen to him
if you care
at all for this child.
And that's the thing, like, The Walking Dead didn't have to say she had a ripped uterus.
Right.
I'm sure there's lots of other things they could have said that would cause problems that he could have fixed or whatever. No, like,
sure, yeah.
I feel like that there was like some kind of baby scare in like the last season of Downton Abbey, and the doctor's like, "Oh, you just need a stitch here, and you're good to go." Like, there's lots of things you could have done, but you said torn uterus, bed rest.
I mean, yeah.
So am I supposed to read this as Maggie would rather? I mean, that's the thing. Like, I'm watching as an intelligent fan, and I'm coming to the conclusion that Maggie must want to look out for Rick's return more than she's caring about preserving the seed of Glenn that's growing within her. I don't think they're trying to imply that.
Like,
that's what I'm saying. I don't think they're trying to imply that, but they are.
They are.
Because of their sloppy storytelling.
Right. And it's like the only thing I can see in these scenes.
Yes. Yes. Like, there should be like a caption, like torn uterus, every single time that she's on the screen.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. So we go back to Alexandria, and Negan is putting on a shaving clinic with Carl. He's putting on a spaghetti sauce clinic.
You always go against the grain, Carl.
I got a thick ass beard. If I went on a first pass with the grain, I never can male shave against the grain.
Mm-hmm.
I get so many ingrown hairs and just tear my face up. Whew, yeah.
But that's the only way to get it smooth.
I guess so. If you have like not as much facial hair as me, because that's a good way to look like you grated your face against cement for me.
Yeah.
And then Olivia's outside and says that she is, Rosita finds her out there. Or wait, was it Rosita? No, it's Tara.
Right.
Tara finds her out there kind of quietly crying to herself and mustering up the courage to go in there, because she promised Rick that she'd look after Judith, and Judith has been in the company of a madman for who knows how long while she's been off crying in a corner somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know what she's going to do if Negan decides to harm this child.
I mean, I guess the thought was you can take comfort in the fact that you would die before you let this child come to harm.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that's like a noble thing to do.
Even if you're powerless to stop
the
harm.
Even if you're powerless to stop the fact that, like, yeah, I mean, I think that's, I mean, I don't know that's wise in every situation, but I certainly think it's noble and brave.
Yeah.
But she then says to Tara that you should go because we're about to sit, which I thought was a weird phrasing. This whole time, like Negan is in full-on smarmy mode, and I'm loving it. I love the fact that he's clean-shaven. I love the fact he's rocking his white T-shirt. He's essentially Rick when he first came to Alexandria, and they're deliberately leaning into that illusion. In fact, he's got this bandage on his wrist that they've never really addressed, and I'm kind of wondering if they are not doing that just to really make him look like comic book Rick. Because comic book Rick got his arm chopped off, and I feel like he still has stump bandaged circa this era. I'm not sure about that, but I just wonder if that was supposed to be a little wink that, like, oh, he's clean shaven, and now he's looking like Rick, and now he's adopting his mannerisms, and we'll just put a bandage on there to make it. Because otherwise, I don't know what's up with the bandage.
I don't either.
Meanwhile, throughout some of these scenes interspersed is Daryl in a cell contemplating the key and the note and coming to the conclusion he's going to try to escape again.
Sure.
Which,
why not?
As I was watching this episode, it's hard for me to get excited because I'm thinking, what the fuck? You're going to get out and doom everyone in Alexandria.
Well, there were no consequences the first time. Why not try it over and over until you succeed, I suppose.
I suppose.
Because maybe there won't be any consequences if you actually get out.
And by the end of the episode, it seems like Rick is ready to maybe step it up a little bit. Like, I honestly don't know what's going to happen when Negan gets back to the Savior Complex and finds all this shit gone. And, like, he could just turn right around and then what?
Right.
You know, Rick's not even there. Rick's off in Hilltop. So there's no and with all of the badasses, too. So if Negan comes calling for vengeance on Alexandria, they're pretty much fucked.
Yeah.
They don't even have a single bullet anymore. Let's see. What else? Rick then comes and with Aaron, and they ponder this kind of like logic puzzle that the person on the boat has constructed for them.
Boat to boat to boat. Jesus, how many boats does this guy have in the water?
One and a half, it turns out, because he's got this bullet-ridden kind of like aluminum John boat that they say is not going to stay afloat for long, but maybe they can get close enough to the canoe to do a boat transfer.
Right.
Rick also offers to let Aaron hang back. Aaron declines and, in fact, destroys the guy's sign that warned them about what a proficient shot he was and made like two rough oars out of it.
And stabby weapons. Like, I'm super impressed with Aaron this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, he not only... So I like this scene a lot with him, and I also like the next scene a lot, where he kind of, you know, espouses both sides' opinions on this whole issue of whether or not they should be cowing to Negan. And he really, like, he has a very level-headed perspective on all of it.
Yeah.
And, like, stereotypically, a gay character would not be written anything like this. Like, Aaron is gung-ho about this mission. He's going to get the job done. And is kind of actually taking the lead on Rick here, right?
Yeah, like, no.
Rick is sort of following Aaron's lead at this point, I liked.
I think that's the best thing about the way Aaron is written as a character is that he's just written as a person.
Right.
Like, yeah. He's no more or less
who
brave
happens
than
to be gay. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So they are going to go at it, I guess. And also I thought that Aaron was kind of low key, properly offended by Rick's attitude. Like he wasn't like, how dare you, is more like, no, I'm here to see it through.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And also look at these badass oars I just made with my feet. we flash back to Negan, who is in Alexandria, and they're all sitting. This was a classic scene. They're all sitting at the table. He's at the head. And he kind of affects, like, you know, an 80s sitcom housewife. Mm-hmm. And, like, we're not waiting for your dad anymore. And puts Lucille in Rick's place and says she's hungry and asks Carl to please pass the rolls. He throws the please on, which I just thought this whole effect and demeanor was really funny.
Yeah, it was great. It's some pretty dark comedy, right?
Right.
I mean, these people are under threat of death here. And he's just ordering them around as if this were a normal family meal for him. I love it.
Yeah. Also, Alexander, the saviors are really blowing a lot of sunshine and even sex proposals up Spencer's ass.
Oh, right.
And
yeah. Sandwich proposals.
Sandwich proposals.
Yeah, come on. Well, I mean, I guess that's a term.
Is Spencer the meat or is he a piece of the
bread? He's definitely the meat. He's getting used and abused. He's definitely the meat.
The little blonde spunky girl woman says, "You like watching haircut?" Because she notices Eugene with the mullet over there perving on him.
And
he
this.
Honestly says, "Yeah, because..." You know, if you don't recall, a couple seasons ago, they randomly showed that he did like watching Abraham and Rosita fuck.
Yeah.
And that everyone was kind of cool with the arrangement.
Awesome.
Nice callback.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, right out in the outskirts of the kingdom, is in her little Carol hut, her Carol cabin, if you will. Mm-hmm. And she's reading a book by the fire and eating pomegranate seeds, and it looks like very Hallmark. But she notices a gift care basket has been left outside her door, and then Morgan is hightailing it, trying to get away without being seen, and she calls him back. He expresses concern that she's being taken care of and looked after, and she reveals that King Ezekiel's been dropping off all kinds of fruits and vegetables and supplies on the regular.
Yeah, I guess the pomegranate, not really significant, right? It's more just, hey, here we have a shitload of fruit.
I don't know. The fact that she's eating, like, I don't know. Like, I remember that the pomegranate was like some kind of Greek thing for some kind of romantic gesture, and it's the,
right. I vaguely remember that.
Right, and I think that there is something to her eating the seeds, like showing that she is receptive to it. I mean, I think that's like supposed to foreshadow her eventually. I mean, obviously, she can't stay. She's Carol. She's not going to stay on the sidelines while all of her friends die.
I don't think so.
And everyone in the kingdom dies. Like, that's just not in her nature, and they have to have this. You know, they have to have the Morgalizing, the end all Morgalizing before they just get over this shit. That's my read of it. So they're kind of talking and catching up and being cute when Richard, the head knight of the kingdom, shows up, also bearing a gift package, and says they need to talk.
Yeah, I feel like, well, I guess we can get into this later, but I feel like Carol obviously doesn't want exactly what she says she wants, or she would just leave. If she really wanted to be left alone, she could make that happen.
Yeah, right. She's not being watched regularly at 3 o'clock in the morning some night. She could pack up all the pomegranate she can hold.
As she's done before.
And just breeze out. That's what I'm saying. Like,
So she clearly has some other motive for staying. And whether it's known to her or whether it's like a subconscious thing to her, I'm not really sure. It seems like she knows that she can be useful in a pinch. Maybe she really does want some companionship, and she's not willing or ready to cut that off entirely, but she's resistant to it.
Yeah.
Outwardly.
No, I agree that this is all subconscious stuff that she's working through. Mm-hmm. Back at the on Golden Pond, Rick and Aaron are making their way to the canoe at the midpoint of the lake when the walkers try to start boarding. They've been bobbing around like bobbers this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of boarding, Aaron and Rick make effective use of their paddle boards in repelling these zombie invaders.
Yeah.
Until Aaron gets to the canoe and is surprised by a surprise walker and flips overboard. Aaron somehow miraculously survives this event and then make it to the houseboat safely.
I don't know how he gets out of that water.
I think he hit under a dumpster.
An underwater dumpster.
It was an underwater dumpster. That's the zombies. That's essentially lead. If the zombies are Superman, they can't they can't see through it.
It's where the Atlanteans keep their garbage.
I mean, I guess if they're a zombie, like, he could just duck underwater and swim away, right? They're not going to be smart enough to, like,
right.
Oh, where, you know, they're like a 1 year old baby, like, oh God, where'd it go? You know.
And I don't think walkers can swim.
No, not the way
we walkers.
Would. I mean, you can bob, they can float, they can thrash around. They're probably buoyant because of their rotting gas, but I agree. They don't swim the way we would think of swimming.
Yeah.
Now,
I can let it slide.
It's still some straight up bullshit.
Right. I mean, he gets pulled over backwards by one that presumably has a hold of him.
Yes.
And can bite him.
That thing, that's the one that I'm like, if this walker had a hold of you, all he's got to do is take his hands, move them to his face, and boom, you're done.
Which he's programmed to do.
Yep. So I still think it's bullshit, but it's like low key, I can't really get that worked up about it bullshit.
Yeah. Overall, not a big deal.
Again, you'd have the exact same amount of drama if they just transferred from one boat to another, because that shit's hard.
Sure, yeah.
You know, there'd be, like, and zombies can claw at them and all that. Like, you don't need for someone to go swimming for me to be like, oh, shit, I'm scared for Aaron.
You could add one foot in one boat, one foot in the other, doing
it
the
starts
splits.
Going the,
and then there's a walker underneath trying to get at his crotch.
They keep teasing this ball chomping, man.
Maybe there's a mulleted walker down there chomping away. Speaking of walkers in the water, did you see, is one of those walkers Robert Kirkman? It really looked like him.
I didn't. So what's weird is I expected that to be the front page on r/The Walking Dead.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't. So I'm starting to doubt it. And I did not watch Talking Dead. Now, he was on it with Norman Reedus again.
Right.
If he was the walker, I would think that that would be front page news. But I didn't see it. So
It really looks like him. I think it's like one of the first ones you see in the water.
It really does look like Robert Kirkman. Mm-hmm. So it could be. It's just maybe, I mean, it's the rare instance where Reddit thinks that's so common knowledge that it gets downvoted.
Right.
But my God.
Or if they talk about it on Talking Dead, no one would mention it, maybe.
Right, because it's like, again, common knowledge. But still, you'd think that'd be a karma farm, because enough people don't watch the show that would probably get upvoted.
Or at least it would be memed somehow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Daryl sneaks around to Savior Complex looking for clothes. I watched the subtitles on this, and you know, when we were watching the live watch, we were making this gag because they dropped this jar and just a shit ton of, like, some kind of pickled thing slides in. We were like, what? Did someone just, like, clog up a toilet or something? What just happened?
Uh-huh.
Someone broke a jar full of pickles or something, and they're having a debate about whether they should just scoop the pickles off the floor and put them in a clean jar.
Yeah, you should.
And they're saying, you know, we're not going to eat this shit. And I couldn't decide whether the food that they give to the plebs that pay for tickets, or if this was like Negan food and they're doing this to subtly stick it to Negan. Like, I appreciated the background communication either way.
I scoop those pickles off the floor all day, every day.
Oh, yeah, they're pickles.
You can rinse them off.
They're
fucking fine.
Pickles.
Yeah.
What could go wrong with a cucumber soaked in, what is it, vinegar?
Yeah.
I don't know how to make brine, some kind of brine. Like, mm-hmm. what could go wrong?
It can be vinegar based, certainly. Nothing.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, and I mean, it's the apocalypse.
It's gross, but
you need food. Pickles are pretty awesome, anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going for it.
So Daryl goes into a room to kind of look for clothes and take shelter for a minute, and he sees a chessboard. The whole time he's wolfing down peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
There's another break, and then they cut back, and they just show Daryl flipping over the chessboard. What does that mean?
I have no idea.
Because they zoom in on the chess piece, and it kind of looks like it's supposed to be a rook, but it also kind of looks sort of like the hilltop.
Hmm.
And at first I thought this was some kind of like master battle map that Negan had, and it's going to pan out, and Daryl's going to see like 10 of these settlements, and he's going to get the idea that, you know, that then maybe we could unite and something, but nothing. He just flips over to chessboard, and I have no fucking clue what the hell.
Does anybody in the show play chess? Have we seen anybody play chess?
I'm sure someone has alluded to it, but I mean,
yeah, chess is ringing a bell, but I don't know why. I can't pull it.
I don't know.
I'm glad he didn't bust into Fat Joseph's room though, because can you imagine Daryl tromping around in there in a 3XL shirt?
Sure,
that would have been pretty funny, actually.
The other thing about, I mean, maybe there is some kind of Morse code thing to the chessboard.
Right. The way the pieces fell and hit the floor.
I flipped in pieces, yeah, definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. Can we call that busted?
I don't know.
The Morse code theory?
I think they would have mentioned it again. I mean, they showed the Morse code board again, but it was incidental.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. if he was communicating to Rick through Morse code, well, he's now back with Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't, and there was no kind of scheme that Rick, like, had cooked up. Like, you know, Daryl kind of escaped under his own horsepower.
Fair.
Aided and abetted by Jesus. So I feel like it's busted.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay.
Anyway, Aaron and Rick loot the house successfully. They find a sign that is an outline of someone flipping them off, and it says, even though you've won, you've lost. Which, like, I wonder what that means. Rick surmises that the only thing this guy ran out of was ammo, because he's got guns, he's got grenades, he's got food, and they decide to cut the anchor and paddle the whole houseboat to shore so they can easily load it up in a truck, which is pretty smart.
Mm-hmm. So what's up with this guy? So, I mean, how do you run out of ammo, still have all the food in the world, still have all the grenades in the world, but you don't leave the boat, or you don't go find more ammo or get to a safe place at all?
I've been thinking about what in the hell this could be, and one easy explanation could be that this guy knew he was low on ammo, so he took what he had left, and he retreated to the surrounding woods, hoping that someone would find and follow back and take the bait, and then he could follow them back to wherever they're going. Okay. Like, any group large and well-armed enough to risk that would be something worth him trying to infiltrate. I don't know.
So you think that the person following them, the boot person in the woods, is the owner of this boat?
I think so, because it makes no sense. The other thing that people are trying to speculate is, like, it's a member of the Oceanside community, like maybe
right,
the girl,
Cindy, or somebody.
Cindy, that's trying to follow. But I don't know that that makes sense geographically.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I couldn't really see it being that.
I mean, their boots were wet and kind of boggy. It seemed like it seemed like the easiest explanation. It somehow connected to this houseboat, but I have no clue. And it looks like that was a pretty big mystery for almost everyone discussing it online.
Right.
Michonne is still. Oh wait a sec. I'm sorry, Rick. After they get everything loaded up, Rick apologizes for making Aaron feel like he doubted him. Rick is just worried that people have lost their faith in him, and he no longer feels comfortable asking them to make supreme sacrifices. And, you know, Aaron and him talk about his attitude and Michonne's and how hard it is to keep, you know, give up everything just to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
But Aaron says, you know, that's a choice they get to make. They go out and take the risk so that the people they care about's hearts keep beating.
Sure.
And that's like, you know, I mean, I'm sympathetic to that view. There's nothing really worse than dying. You can come back from everything short of death.
Sure.
In this world.
Yeah.
So until you have a clear angle on Negan, I guess that's the thing I've been missing. Like this realization that we're not giving up necessarily. There's just no play to be made. So in the meantime, we have to survive. So when the play, there is a play to be made.
Yeah. I think actually, maybe the most ridiculous statement I can possibly make at the end of this season is that before his death, I was on Spencer's side. I actually think Spencer's plan was a good one, not to kill Rick, but to lull Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Negan, into some sort of false sense of security here,
right?
Find out more about him, about their compound, spend months, maybe years, like he said, doing it, and learn when and where and how to strike.
Right.
That's what you do. That's the core of this resistance. That's what it's going to have to be.
I mean, there's a fine line.
And he was just either Rick was too stubborn or Rick was too afraid to go along with this plan, or Spencer was a little too gung-ho and angry about the rest of his family getting killed that he tried to take out Rick and it ended badly for him.
I mean, there's a fine line because,
right,
you know, I think Rick's group has been too antagonistic. Maybe Ezekiel's group's been too compliant. And both seem like they're hard to do with the Saviors, because the Saviors are looking to provoke you and looking. I mean, that's what I don't understand, is why Negan allows his stupider thugs to just run roughshed over people that have done good work for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that just shit makes my blood boil. But he allows it. That's like a huge weakness that he doesn't seem to be aware of. I don't know. Then the wet, muddy boot shows up. We talked about that already. Michonne is still holding the redheaded Savior hostage while they're driving to, presumably, to go meet Negan. She asks her a lot of questions, like, how long have you been with Negan? Why are you out here alone? And the woman is stonewalling her, and Michonne says, look, I know you're doing this because you think you can't talk your way out of me shooting you, but you don't know me. Let's just see where this goes. And the woman continues to stonewall her.
Yeah, and she's very adamant, like, I'm going to find a way that this ends well for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about her in that moment.
How did you take that?
I took it, you know, like I just said, I feel like it's about finding a way for her to end this problem.
Because I thought maybe that would mean her dying.
Potentially.
Like, I want to
end this. I don't know
that
that's
terms.
Off the table.
Because, like, when she says, I'm not going to kill him today, what was she going to go negotiate on Rick's behalf? Like, I'm trying to think of all the things that she could have meant by that, and none of them are particularly good nor compelling.
Yeah, I don't know if she's just doing some reconnaissance here.
Yeah.
And that maybe if this woman had talked to her a little bit more, she would have talked her way out of being killed. And then, you know, I don't know where that leads for Michonne.
Right.
Like, if you let her live, she's going to tell the group.
Exactly.
And they're going to come back and either kill you,
Or
just move all their shit and you'll never find it again. Like,
right. Or worse, kill someone you care about that's
right.
not you.
Yeah.
Which seems to be what the Rick's group can't fucking comprehend.
And I guess
but,
the thing
Or
I
she
can't...
can go meet Negan, and Negan's like, you're going to go give a big speech to Rick about how you can't keep your woman in control, and maybe he kills Rick and puts Michonne in charge. Like, there's no way if you know that you can't defeat him, I don't understand what she's trying to do. And I wish...
Well, she didn't know that until she got there, right?
Yeah.
So...
Maybe she was hoping there'd be, like, a fucking, Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. It turns out he doesn't have that. Like, every dude that was around the ring or around the fire, that's all it. The dudes he had. Like, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think... This entire plot line, like, I like the fact that they showed Michonne turning a corner here.
Yeah.
But my problem was I didn't understand the redheaded woman's motivation. I didn't understand what Michonne is trying to do.
I think she wanted to die.
I do, too.
Okay.
But I also don't understand what the redheaded woman actually showed her. Like, literally, I don't understand what the hell was going on.
Right.
But we can get
was
there.
It a roadblock? Sure, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. So, Maggie is eating a cucumber like a fucking savage. Like
an animal. She's just...
Come on, you are not
an ape.
Yeah.
Eat this like a human, just slice it up. You have knives.
Yeah, don't just fucking eat it like it's
know. Like you're a Norwegian. We have some email later on.
Famed for their savage eating of cucumbers.
Well, if you've read the email, you would know.
Sasha and Enid say that, you should run for president. And Sasha lies and says that Jesus left today because Maggie wanted to give him a to-do list for fucking pencils and crayons, which if I were Jesus, I'd say, fuck you and your pasta machine and your crayons. I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
We are on survival basis. Let the kid, do they have a twig? Is there fire? They can fucking write with charcoal, Maggie. I don't need to go scavenge pencils and risk my goddamn neck for that.
Pencils.
Anyway.
How many kids are there that she's teaching them all?
She's got, they made a point of showing quite a bit of kids at the Hilltop.
I haven't even seen people at the Hilltop. There are like three dudes and what, 15 kids?
Yeah. There's Jesus, there's the guy standing on the wall with Maggie, and there's Gregory, and that's, and there's the blacksmith.
And then there's 100 kids running around, a school full of kids running around.
And they can all use fucking charcoal pencils as far as I'm concerned. So Maggie goes off, and Enid says, why did you lie about Jesus? Because I know for a fact that he ran off like 2 days ago. And they have a conversation where Sasha essentially says, I'm also going to try to kill Negan, but I don't want Maggie to know about it because Maggie will want to go with me. And mm-hmm. Enid's like, everyone wants to kill Negan. The whole community rise up, and Sasha's like, please, that's silly. I mean, essentially, right?
But Enid's so right. Enid has the community pegged.
She does. She does. Yeah. And you know, but Sasha's like, if you care about Maggie, you will keep this under wraps because, I don't know. I thought it was weird that Sasha had the entire community pegged wrong. And I wish I'd seen some scenes where Enid was kind of like, in lieu of all this terrible bullshit, Enid like, you know, mingling with the Hilltop and seeing people like talking sedition about Gregory and about Negan and being at the boiling point. I mean, they gave us a little bit of that in the episode before they invaded the satellite complex, but I would like to have seen more of that, honestly. Like, why?
Yeah, she almost, I don't know if they're not showing a ton of it because they want her to seem extremely perceptive.
But
which
what's weird
I think they pulled off
is like she's always been the loner who's withdrawn from people, and now she's the one that can read them best of all. Like, that's fine if you want to evolve her character, but you got to show it, man.
Sure.
But whatever.
Yeah, she's kind of the voice of this episode, too, right? I mean, she's saying, enough of this one-man army shit. Let's get together and let's do this right. By the end, everyone has realized it, but she was kind of on board with it from the beginning.
So back at the Carol cabin, Richard is explaining about how there's been lots of places that have come together and fallen apart since the zombie apocalypse struck. And I'm like, dude, we know this is season 7, The Walking Dead. I've been through 5 of them myself. And he had a community and he lost it and his family. And he lost all hope until he found the kingdom in Ezekiel. And that they were a well-organized, slightly crazy Shakespearean breath of fresh air. And that the saviors recognized how formidable the kingdom was, so they made this deal where they wouldn't set a boot inside if they continued to give him produce. But saviors being what they are, Richard recognizes this as an unstable situation, and he thinks the only solution is to preemptively strike against them before they lose everything. And he wants Morgan and Carol to help convince him since they've got his ear.
He's talking to the wrong people. I mean, come on.
What kind of leader would King Ezekiel be if just because he's physically attracted to Carol that he would listen to her above all else?
Right. Not a rational one.
Yeah.
Probably not a very stable or reliable one.
I mean, I guess that's a consequence of some of the changes they've made to the characters, is like some of this stuff feels a little Hail Mary-ish.
Yeah, I mean,
like Richard, you're a fucking badass and a community leader. Like, if you can't convince him, what the hell?
Yeah, so is that his name, Richard?
Yeah.
I didn't bother to learn his name. I called him Shoulder Pads.
Sure.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's all like, oh, I think Carol's pretty. I mean, obviously they've had a heart-to-heart. He understands who Carol is.
Right.
A lot of that kind of stuff. So, you know, every leader does have people they trust and respect and listen to. And I think Carol could be one of those people, but it was just kind of all of a sudden.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. It was a single, like, even though we decried at the time the single focus, it was but one episode that we took Carol from her, you know, fake housewife routine to Ezekiel busting her on that, to Ezekiel, you know, forming a relationship with her and then kind of like putting his hat into his pomegranate into the romantic interest ring.
It would feel better if that was spaced out through the course of, you know, 8 episodes.
Yeah.
Then it would make sense that, oh, they formed a bond.
Because it's literally been 6 weeks since I saw that episode, and here it's like, oh, yeah, yep. Like, Ezekiel trusts you guys more. Like, Morgan, I bought a little bit more because Ezekiel made a point of saying, like, I see something in you. I've been out into shit with you and how you handle yourself and what, and you know, we definitely, you are a person that we could, you know, build parts of this community around.
Right, yeah.
Carol, just like, I know you're a faker.
Mm-hmm.
And
I used to be a faker too. And you're hot. And here's a pomegranate.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just complaining over nothing. Maybe it's just the 6 weeks that's gone by. But
yeah,
it does feel like it's not as earned of a moment anyway. Rosita and Father Gabriel have a chat about her single bullet, which I thought this scene was pretty good. And, you know, she lays out the logic of her being a sacrificial lamb. Like, she should have been the one that got her brains beat out. It's only fair that she goes and puts Negan out of his misery now because everyone else has some kind of unique purpose or niche that they fulfill or have someone depending on them but her.
Sure. And it's never more on display than it is in the final scene.
Right.
Actually, you know, she gives a nod to Sasha, but apart from that, like, nobody's looking to Rosita. Nobody's rushing up to hug Rosita.
Right.
I do really like Gabriel's way of talking to Rosita here, right?
Yeah.
Like, look, I agree. That fucker's got to die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a man of the cloth, and I'm telling you that. I'm not a very good man of the cloth. I've killed many people in my own congregation. But,
right. Out of selfishness and cowardice.
Right. But this guy's got to die, and that doesn't necessarily mean you have to.
Right.
And not, like, saying that to her, but getting her to understand his point by asking questions. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, he has to die. Why do you need to die?
Sure. And also just like, yes, we need to win and we will win, but we have to wait for a moment or we have to create it together.
Sure.
And you're part of that together. We need you.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that she had abandoned her decision to kill Negan, and it wasn't until the graphic moment of Spencer, who I think she kind of realized she has genuine feelings for her deep down inside. The shock of losing yet another boyfriend to this asshole that made her just impulsively shoot him.
I think you're right.
I'm not overlooking or excusing it, and I also think that it's dumb that she was swayed by Father Gabriel and not Eugene, because Eugene said damn near as much eloquent things and true things as she needed to hear, and she just wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like I said, I've been pretty critical of Father Gabriel. I thought, if this is his role, which is essentially talk sense into all these stupid people, that's maybe something he can do.
Yeah, he doesn't have to necessarily be heroic.
He doesn't have to win the argument.
Or noble, or any of those things. He can just be a voice of reason. And I think, you know, I don't want to say too much about religion because I don't know a lot about outside religions that are not what I grew up in. But I think that's usually the role of a priest in a community anyway. Like, you go to your father with
some
your
sort
troubles.
Sort of counselor, yeah.
And he counsels you. You know, he may counsel you from the Bible, or he may counsel you just kind of from his own knowledge of the world.
Right.
But that I feel is, like, the best role of a priest,
right,
usually.
And I think half of, well, more than half of successful counseling is just listening to people.
Sure.
Like, you don't even have to have good advice. Just like,
they will tell you what they want.
Having them talk it out. And sometimes that's all people need, is to talk something out, and then they know the decision, what decision they should make. So
right.
I agree. I think that would be a useful role for him.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it seems like it wasn't, I don't know. I guess it was effectual. I guess it did do something to change her mind.
Daryl continues to sneak around the Savior Complex, trying to escape the questionable musical tastes of their saviors. Like, this background music they were listening to, I'm like, what? This is just terrible.
It was bad, yeah.
Why would any group of people, is this what they did? Maybe they all hate each other. Like, I want to listen to rap. I want to listen to country. I want to listen to pop. I want to listen to gospel. So they all agree to something they all hate just to piss each other off. That's the only explanation for why this is playing in this group with this group of people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know. Seems like a reasonable explanation.
It had two really odd music choices in a row. Mm-hmm. Like, last week we talked about it sounded like the warm-up band for Explosions in the Sky.
Yeah.
This sounded like almost like a warm-up band for, like who would be the undercard for a Weird Al Yankovic concert.
Okay.
You know?
This sounded like the stage music they play before the band comes on.
Uh-huh.
Like, just so people can, like,
sure, find their seats,
mill around and get drinks. Yeah, yeah. And, yeah,
yeah, this is your 10-minute warning before the act starts.
Right.
Back at the Carol cabin, Richard hilariously doubts Carol's combat experience. And I love her deadpan, "You're wrong." And then Morgan's like, "You're very wrong."
Yeah.
"She may be the most capable fighter in this room." Which, it's funny, because any other show, I'd be primed to call bullshit,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, it's like, whatever. But Carol, I can't really dispute that. Like, she fucking was a dyed-in-the-wool true killer in, yeah. like, two or three different episodes.
Yep.
Like, she fucking she cleaned out Terminus.
Yeah.
And she retook Alexandria from the wolves almost single-handedly.
Yeah, it was fucking awesome.
So, yeah, you underestimate the silver fox at your fucking peril.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, "Look, I don't want any part of this. This is why I'm here. I don't want any of you coming here. I don't want to have anything to do with your lives, your deaths. I think I am tired of feeling responsible for the things that happen around me and being a leader. And I it's essentially Atlas's shrugging in this little cabin." And Morgan kind of backs her up with some of his moralizing, and Richard's like, "You know, it's not enough to just choose to that you have to kill. It's going to get so bad that you're not going to be forced to kill, you're going to have to choose to kill. And why not make that choice before someone that you love dies?" Which I thought was pretty powerful. And he says, "If you don't, the blood will be on your hands." But then he looks him over and says, "Maybe you're used to that." Which, that's kind of these people's problems, right? They both feel culpable for deaths that are haunting them.
Sure. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know that I totally disagree with Morgan here. Like, you are, by pushing the issue, by pressing it, you're gonna have to kill people. Mm-hmm. That Morgan is essentially saying you may not have to. Like, if you don't press the issue here, maybe it never comes to that point where you have to go kill these people.
Yeah, this is a piece. You don't know that the Savior is going to push it further than this.
Right.
I think he's foolish.
I do too, yeah.
I mean, it's a viewpoint. It's something you can debate, whereas last season it was just a pure philosophical response that seemed stupid in the context of the zombie apocalypse. So I guess that's progress. But I have a theory that they're setting these two up to be these foils, and only one of them is going to survive whatever chaos comes next.
Okay.
Because it just seems like whichever dies first is going to pull the other one off of their paralysis.
Yeah, yeah, they have linked them in such a way that, you know, Morgan's already killed to save Carol.
Yeah, like I don't see both of them surviving, but one of them is going to have to die so the other one can be galvanized into action.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure who it's going to be, but that's my theory. Carol tells them to both get out. She doesn't want to see either one of them again, and they do. And we then go back to Alexandria, and Spencer cleans up his house, then his face, which I thought was a weird camera trick that they kind of slowly pan, and the room goes from being trashed because Rick tossed it for contraband to it being clean, and to the extent that I thought we were actually flashing back before the zombie apocalypse. I thought we were going to see a, like, why is Spencer the way he is kind of scene.
Right, so but I actually knew we were flashing forward because, like, the house was empty.
I think,
like,
we just flashed horizontally.
Well, I mean,
we flashed
forward a little bit.
We,
like,
flashed 45 minutes into the future.
Yeah, but I knew we were flashing forward because, like, the house was totally empty except for Spencer, and his mom would never leave him home alone.
Yeah. But they pan past with suitcases, and I thought that's, like, maybe we're just going to, his mom's packing off to go to I don't know what the hell, but I thought it was weird.
Yeah.
And
I thought it worked.
Then he practices saying hi in the mirror, which, Jesus, man, this is why you shouldn't be talking to Negan. Richard then, after his disappointment at the Carroll cabin, retreats to a little no camping area, which, hilariously, they act like it's the fucking entrance to the Batcave.
Okay.
Like, yeah. This is just a clearing in the woods, man. Like, this wasn't the only point of entrance, but whatever. Inside this little small camper, there's some stored gas and it looks like water, and he just has himself a little cry.
Yeah, I guess this is his nest. Is that what's happening?
I don't know whether it's his, we're supposed to understand it's his family's old RV or it's just his Fortress of Richardtude. I don't know, and I don't even know why this scene was important for us to see.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because
I don't care about this guy. Like, you haven't done anything to make him a character yet. Maybe that's the road they're starting on.
I mean, certainly seems like he's the one. Like, there's somebody at every location except for maybe Alexander, where everyone is on this board. But it seems like he's the one. No one in the kingdom knows except for Ezekiel and his inner knights what's going on here.
Right.
But also, we already knew that Richard was kind of over these guys. Like, everything about his character in the first episode we saw him was very much anti-savior. He got beat up by them. He challenged them. He was feeding them dead zombie-infested pig guts. Like, yeah, I don't know why it's important to see him cry for 2 minutes in this place. Because he's got a lot of gas there, but, like, not enough to power a war effort. He's got, it looks like empty bottles, which I didn't understand what the significance of
the
empty bottles. Yeah.
That was weird. I don't know.
Like, I thought that maybe they're full of water, but it didn't look like they were when he brought them to Carol. I mean,
maybe he's going to fill them with gas, make some Molotovs.
There you go. Big ass Molotovs. Spencer, as walking down the streets of Alexandria to meet Negan, he's got a half-drank bottle of some kind of bourbon in his hands. Rosita sees him and asks him if he's on a hot date, and he says, I'm just doing what I think my mom would do, which is build up trust and rapport.
Which
that
is
might
ground me and send me to my room. Wait, no.
Say, I'm such a disappointment compared to my older brother. and maybe this will pay off in the coming months and years. And then he also says, I thought we had something good. And she says, I used you because you were handsome to forget the situation I was in. And then he says, would you be up for dinner? And she goes, no, I used you.
No, she doesn't do that.
The things that I use, I do not take out for dinner. I discard them. I throw them away. That's the definition of use, Spencer.
I hate to disappoint you, Aaron. She doesn't say any of that.
No, she actually seems charmed by this guy,
yeah.
Which I don't buy this relationship at all.
I mean, so he's a good-looking guy, right?
Yeah, no,
and
I totally
Rosita,
get
I'm trying. I'm really trying to see Rosita's point of view here. Like, okay,
how can
he's a good-looking guy, and he's charming in some ways every once in a while. He's okay.
Sweet is how she describes
Sweet
him.
Sweet is what she says. I don't know, man. He's just...
This woman is just a fucking post-apocalyptic badass. I don't see how she can overlook this guy's cowardice and softness.
Right? I'm with you. It's not going to work out long term. Maybe she's just going to give him another dose of medicine, use him again, and then send him on his way.
I mean, I don't know. Like I said, it'd be interesting if she's like, hey, I'm content to keep using you, bud. But
right.
I don't know, because they also seem to build this into the inciting event to shoot Negan / Lucille. And like I said, I just didn't buy it.
Yeah.
Like, Spencer shouldn't have been this big of a shit, I guess. But whatever. Fat Joe busts Daryl trying to steal a bike, and Daryl in turn busts Fat Joe's head wide open. Fat Joey says, please, please, I'm just trying to get by. Daryl says, it ain't about getting by here, it's about getting it all. And Jesus mm-hmm. comes around the corner and sees Daryl shocked at the savagery.
I was too, frankly. No mercy, Daryl.
I don't
whatsoever.
Blame him.
Like, I don't either.
We just a taste of what we saw them put, the dehumanizing shit that they put him through. I can totally see where he would just beat the shit out of anyone that he got a chance to
do. Sure. Yeah.
So back at Alexandria, what's going on? Oh yeah, Spencer goes to meet with Negan, and his like retainers kind of like block his way. But eventually Negan comes out and says, yeah, come on in, I guess. Michonne is then shown by the redheaded savior. They drive up on a hillside and she goes, look at this. This is Negan. And she gestures to a crossroads in a fairly wide open field where hundreds of people are just milling around.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, if this is a traffic block or some kind of checkpoint, it's the most inefficient checkpoint of all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those people have got to shit, those people have got to eat, like there's got to be supply. Like, I wish I knew what the hell they were doing.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a real puzzler. It can't just be a show of force, because who are they showing it to?
Right. And how are they not seeing, if Michonne can see them, how are, and they're in the middle of the road that they're guarding, how did they not see them?
Right.
Like, this, this is like the season opener of season two, where it's just they wanted to do this one thing, but it was just staged and conceived so poorly that I just didn't. I have no idea. I had no idea what she was looking at and why it was so impressive. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of
just
bodies
sheer
down
numbers,
there,
right?
But without any context of who they are and where they're at and what they're doing, like, yeah, it's sheer numbers. But again, I'm wanting to know, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, the questions are different than the ones they probably want you to be asking,
right?
Like, you know, does this woman want to die? That almost gets lost in the scene here.
Right.
You know, I think she's committing suicide by Michonne, but I'm not sure, because I'm asking those same questions you are. Well, I should be paying attention to what she's saying.
I know. And she says, this is Negan. We're all Negan. Whatever you're trying to do, it's not going to work, but you still have choices. You can burn this car, roll it into a lake and lose it, and then kill me with the silencer in the back, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Which Michonne does, which I guess I've come to appreciate that this woman, I guess, was tired of Negan's shit and just wanted to die.
Yeah.
Why did she then fight Michonne? Like, there.
Right. Her on the way over there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of get into what I'm picking up what they're laying down, but so much of this stuff just doesn't match up and doesn't add up. And the situation just doesn't feel like it's grounded in any kind of reality. It didn't work at all for me.
Yeah, and I honestly didn't know. I didn't understand Michonne's motivations quite enough.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
None of this, like, I appreciate that Michonne has come around, but I don't know.
But from where?
Yeah, I don't know what facts and what information that she's going on, other than there's a lot of dudes here.
Right.
Which, okay, I get it.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, she takes that as, there are too many to take on by myself.
Right.
You know, even if I were to sneak in, even if I were to kill Negan,
there are so many saviors that they can essentially throw a Woodstock in the middle of this crossroads and, you know, not disrupt their operations. So,
yeah,
this large outdoor festival concert, this fucking Renaissance fair they're putting on is impressive. I better go back and tell Rick that we're doomed. I don't get it. And also, it seemed like there was not a lot of people getting it online, too. So if you feel like you know what they're doing, please send us an email at watchingdead@baldmove.com.
Yeah, because we are going to be doing a recap.
Yeah, we're going to
for the season.
We're going to do a hurry up recap. We're going to do like a look ahead and
a wrap up, whatever.
A little season wrap up. And we're going to get it out this Friday.
Yeah.
So it's a very shortened recap week, but we're wanting to shut down for Christmas next week. So that's what you got to look forward to. Then we have Rick arriving at the gate, and he's pissed to find out that Negan's there. And there's just a bunch of savior assholes hassling about looking at his supply before they pass. Negan and Spencer are sitting on the porch and drinking. Negan wants to play pool, but he wants to play it outside. Spencer informs him that there's a pool out in the garage, and apparently they drag it out. Not yep. super important. Also, I found online that he refers to this one woman as a rat. Mm-hmm. She is supposed to be a savior that's actually called Tara in the comics. But since in the television show they already have a Tara, they thought it was clever to just right. reverse the name and call her a rat.
Mm-hmm.
That's
sure. Why not?
That's something you can do.
Yeah,
sure.
You can definitely do that if you're writing a show.
but like, I just thought that I was like, I don't know. I thought a rat was kind of a cool name until I found that out.
Yeah.
So the saviors find as they're going through Rick and Aaron's find, they see the middle finger note and they think that Aaron left it there and they jump a shit about it. And Aaron suddenly finds himself tongue tied and cannot string together the three or four sentences that would probably avoid all this. But on the other hand, I think they just wanted to kick one of these guys' asses just because they're assholes and they're bullies. And they savagely beat Aaron right in front of Rick.
Mm-hmm.
And while when they're finished, he helps Aaron to his feet and he ironically quips, "My heart's still beating, right?" And I think this is what turned the corner on Rick. Like, he's seeing that there is no play in which, you know, we can coexist with these people. They're going to grind us into dust.
Right. And I mean, even
this is Nazi Germany. It cannot be appeased.
Yeah, this is what Richard was talking about. Shoulder pads, what he was talking about when he says, you know, these people can't be trusted. They're going to take it too far. And they are here. I mean, this is not part of the deal. Rick just brought back a massive haul. He was trying to hand it all over and they kicked the shit out of him just because.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of like these people don't anyone that's OK with this kind of power structure is bad by definition. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they're outlaws. Like, they're not going to respect any kind of agreement. And I guess that's Negan's weakness. I thought that he was going to be like, you know, very law and order if he kept his troops in line and he was the only one that could, like, you know, tactically use cruelty to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys are just like fucking, you know, playing around with toys. They don't understand what they're doing, and they don't understand the if you just arbitrary and capricious nature of these punishments, they're actually going to you reach a point where a person's back against a wall and it's like, well, why not rebel?
Yeah, nothing
like
to lose.
It's a dangerous powder keg type of situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it makes Negan seem a little dumber than I think they want him to be.
Yeah, or even if he understands this, he doesn't have a tight enough grip on the people beneath him.
Yeah.
Where they don't act out like this.
Right.
Because surely he has to understand the kind of position he's in. Like, a guy doesn't get to the place where Negan is without understanding these things.
But maybe, I mean, we don't really know how he got to the place he's at, so maybe he did.
I can't imagine that he could be that manipulative of people without understanding the consequences of those types of actions.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. So Spencer says he wants to talk to Negan about Rick because Rick has got a history of not working well with others, and he explains how his mom used to rule this place and everything was just hunky-dory, and that I can be the leader that she was, and that's what this place needs, and that's what you need. Negan retorts that Rick hates my guts, but he's out there working for me. He's swallowing his hate and getting things done to protect the people he loves. You are here while he's away trying mm-hmm. to get me to eliminate your rival for you.
Yeah.
And my guess is because you don't have guts. And then he finds Spencer's guts and he admits that he's wrong.
Yeah, they were inside him the whole time, which I freaking love. It love was the line from Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah, where he's like, I have never been so, like, boy is my, I forget exactly what he said, but.
Yeah, I have never been so wrong in my whole life.
And I thought the reactions were epic, and they kind of, you know, panned around and you got everybody's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of wish that they'd played a little bit more like, eh. You know, because this was such
Spencer.
Yeah, it's like, this kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Spencer would do something that stupid. I mean, they've been living with him for years, right? They know.
Right.
Like, he's the least capable of her sons, and one of the sons was, like, spectacularly incapable.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even make it through, like, three episodes.
Right.
So, I just wish there had been a little bit of kind of like, eh. Negan says he wants someone to step forward to clean the mess, or they can come finish the game of pool. And Rosita takes this opportunity to whip out her gun and shoot Negan, which then goes to a commercial break, the smallest of cliffhangers.
Right, which, you know, fine. The cliffhanger got us talking. Like, during that commercial break, we were like, did they just shoot Negan? Did they just kill Negan? I mean, Jeffrey Dean Morgan's a big actor. They might have just killed him.
When I was thinking, like, yeah, I was like, well, that makes sense because that would save some money. And also, they've got this weird thing where, you know, Daryl's with the Saviors and Dwight is kind of evil. Maybe Dwight takes over the Saviors. Uh-huh. And, like, I think that.
And they've been making this whole thing of we are Negan. So maybe anybody steps up and becomes Negan.
Yeah. Like, that's literally going to be true.
Yeah.
But it turns out.
They don't.
It turns out this headshot machine with her one bullet manages to hit Lucille.
Oh, my God.
And it embed into the bat, and he.
This is ridiculous.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan's performance, where he plays Negan as like slightly terrified, but also pissed beyond belief and jacked with adrenaline, I thought was really good. Mm-hmm. And he also correctly deduces that this is a homemade bullet, and you know, Rosita, to her credit, is kind of a badass in resisting the, like, you know, because a rat gets right in her face and puts a knife. And I thought, like, okay, well, maybe Rosita's face will get carved up or maybe she'll die. Like, I don't see how anyone makes it out of this alive, because if Negan allows this to stand on top of the Carl aggression, on top of the other, then there's just no way. An authoritarian leader can't let this shit slide.
No, it's kind of. I don't know how to take this, because he doesn't kill anyone for trying to kill him.
Right.
He kills them because they won't give up who made the bullet.
Right.
So is it cool to try to kill Negan? Is he fine with that?
Well, I think.
Is this like Klingon society where he just he doffs his hat and says, good job, good day to you, sir?
Well, I think killing Olivia was tactical, because it was. And then stealing Eugene was a lot of punishment. That's something that Rosita has to carry on her shoulders now.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the thing. He couldn't have known that. He couldn't have known that they had this conversation about the bullet and how it's going to cost someone, but it's not going to cost Rosita. It's going to cost someone else.
Yeah.
And she denied the whole thing, and then. Now it's all coming true.
But also, he also had just killed Spencer, so like, there's got to be a tactical consideration of like, how many people can I really kill in this community?
I feel like you got to kill one for trying to kill you.
Yeah, I broadly.
Because that is the most offensive thing you can do, yes?
Right. Yeah, that's the one thing that cannot not be allowed. Like, it seems like you would kill someone that she actually cares about and her.
Right.
So just, you know that if anybody steps to me, it's going to be you and your friends and family.
Instead, he kills no one for that.
Yeah, it's
He lets her cut her face on a knife.
Yeah, which was pretty fucking badass.
Which was pretty badass. Maybe he just has ultimate respect for badass. Like, he doesn't kill Carl because Carl's a little badass.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't kill Rosita because Rosita is a badass. I don't know.
It's kind of, well, I mean, I think he also really likes, that's the other kind of low-key thing, is I think he really likes Rosita.
Like looks-wise?
Everything.
Okay, that she's a badass, and that she's hot, and that,
like, I think he would probably find it pretty interesting and rewarding to break a person like that.
Oh, kind of like Daryl?
And put him in, well, yeah, but only, like, you know, like a Daryl you can fuck. Like, you know, to bring him into his fold of quote-unquote wives.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah, and that's good luck with that.
So I'm trying to figure out Negan, because maybe an accurate way to read Negan is that he's just bored. Like, he's run roughshod over this world and has won for so long. He's kind of like Conan at the end of The Barbarian. He's sitting on the throne and he just looks bored and like, you know, why the fuck did I do all this conquering? And Rick's group, like, even though it's a huge threat, it's also rekindled his love of victory again. So like, I think on some level it's like, why doesn't the Joker kill the Batman? Because then what he would do
ruin his fun.
Yeah, so that's you know, you got to go to Joker logic, but that kind of makes a little bit of sense.
Maybe. I mean, he seems like he's a bit insane. I want to bring up one thing about this whole scene here.
Okay.
That I found confusing, or maybe not confusing, but I'm just looking for a solid answer to. So at the beginning of this scene, they're out playing pool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can
Drew Carey style.
Oh, he did. He have a pool table in his
backyard?
Yeah, he
has in his backyard,
right?
Seems like it would go to in
it
Cleveland.
Would be ruined immediately.
In Cleveland, one Midwest winter would fuck that table up.
Oh,
unless it's made
absolutely.
Yeah, unless it was made out of like pure marble or something.
It's fiberglass top.
Can you imagine how hard those edges would be?
Oh,
you,
man.
You bank off of pure marble with like, oh man.
Yeah, you'd chip.
You'd chip balls
or,
all the time. Yeah. And, yeah.
Anyway, so they're outside playing pool, and you can see the Alexandrians kind of wandering up mm-hmm. to the pool table. And I couldn't tell. I don't know why so many of them would just wander up to this pool table where this madman is playing pool.
I think they were summoned.
Right. So if they were summoned, that tells me that he was planning something with Spencer all along.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't really the, I took your guts out because you're coming at the leader of your community. And you're a coward. It was more like, I'm going to kill this guy because I can see that he's duplicitous.
Yeah, see, I think he smoked out the intention of this trip way
immediately,
before. Right.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right.
So, I think you're right, yeah.
I mean, they didn't show that, and I'm fine with it because I think it works. Because otherwise, it's just dumb. They just all kind of like, oh, the pool in the street, that's kind of cool.
Right. But you want to be anywhere near this guy right now?
Yeah.
No thanks.
I want to see that Negan. If he how he say what you will, he strokes a mean cue ball.
Right.
You know, like they're trying. They want to see
the Black Widow of the Alexandria community of the apocalypse.
Exactly. So Rick comes up all pissed, and Negan is delighted to see him. He's like, Rick, and I think this is a Jeffrey Dean Morgan. What do you call that? An ad lib?
I think so. Yeah.
Because I've heard Rick, Andrew Lincoln say that you get like you do so much screaming that you tear your voice out in like the height of doing Walking Dead and like that he and John Bernthal like when John was off and like he would call him from the set of Wolf of Wall Street and you know he'd be like oh sounds like you had one of those days when Andrew could barely speak.
Uh-huh.
And this was like, you know, his voice is cracked because he had ripped it up and doing these scenes. And he just quipped that your people got me screaming so much. I've lost my voice.
Loved it.
And Rick comes accusing. So I thought we had a deal. He's like, look, your kid hid in one of my trucks, a machine gunned a bunch of my dudes.
It's fair.
And I brought him back home and made him spaghetti. And Rick's face is just priceless. He can't fucking believe it. Another one of your people wanted me to kill you and hit him in charge. And I took him out. And then someone shot Lucille and I killed one of your biggest mouths that you had to feed. So Rick then says, look, your shit's at the gate. Just go. And Negan essentially says, I ain't leaving without finding who made his bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And Arat threatens Eric, Aaron's boyfriend. Then Tara steps forward to confess. And Eugene quickly takes it on his shoulders. Negan believes him. Asks Lucille for strength. I think this is to not kill anyone.
Yeah.
Because I think he really wanted to. He really wanted to follow your advice.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says he's taking Eugene and threatens Rick that he's way in the hole as far as collections because of this stunt. Tells him his kitchen's a goddamn mess and then takes off. And Rosita's kind of begging him to not take Eugene to take her and said, but look, you fucked up, Rosita.
Yeah.
Eugene said,
this,
there's a price to be paid and you won't be the one paying it. And you wanted your fucking bullet. So there you go.
Right. And I love this moment because, you know, it's not just that someone else is paying the cost, but it's the very person who told her there would be cost for other people to pay.
Right.
And it has never stung more for Rosita right now.
Right. Because, you know.
Which is awesome.
Eugene's right.
Eugene is right.
And if he gets out of the situation, he's going to be insufferable. That's true, the real problem here. So then, you know, Andrew Lincoln's given Rick one of his patented Rick is shattered faces when fucking Spencer rises from the dead.
I forgot this was going to happen.
Yep.
It was such a nice surprise.
And Rick kind of looked like, this is just what I needed. This is just the thing that I needed. We cut the commercial and then we come back and Rick is in prison. The prison that Morgan was building.
Prison of his own making.
He is. Has no bars, but he's still in it. And he's kneeling in front of the You Lose sign and the hatchet. Now, last night when I was watching it, I thought that you remember last season, that before they went on the ill-fated raid on the Savior Complex, that Eugene entrusted Rick with like schematics for building bullets?
Yeah.
I thought that's what he was looking at. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That he's literally pondering like the choice between, you know, and thinking out tactics and whatever. The fact that he's meditating before the hatchet and the fuck you, you lose, like, I don't know what they're going for, the symbolism.
Well, if I were to guess, I would say maybe it is...
Rick's tired of losing, he wants to pick the hatchet?
Well, if he gets his way here, you know, and the community just kind of tolerates the existence they have under Negan, maybe that is in itself a form of losing for the community.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to figure out, should he stay the course that he's set, or should he pick up the hatchet? Should he, you know, kind of do what everybody in this community wants him to do and fight back?
Right. But then also maybe the fact is he's looking, he's like, I just got a hatchet. What is that going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, Negan's giving me the middle finger and I got a hatchet. What am I going to do? Michonne finds him there and says, I found my way. I want it, but I want it to be our way. And I found that there's more of them than we thought. And it's like numbers is not even close. So I know we can't really do anything now, but it doesn't change how I feel that we have to fight for Judith and Carl and for Alexander and the Hilltop and for everyone. Mm-hmm. And Rick says, I know that now. And next we see Maggie up on the wall.
There's a great speech from Michonne.
It really was. No, this scene was pretty great. It wasn't the whole, like, you don't know what it is out there and we got to make tough.
Right.
Like, I wish I know more about what Michonne was thinking and doing when she tried this whole thing. But even in it, because it would land even more. But even without that knowledge, I still felt it landed pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Maggie spots Rick and company coming up, and he asks her if she's okay, and she says that, yes, I and the baby are okay, and Rick says he's ready to fight, and Daryl and Jesus are there too, and Rick and Daryl hug, and then they start making out, and then Daryl slips Rick his python, and then they tenderly make love. Sasha and Rosita have a bit of a moment. Carl and Enid have a bit of a moment. Mm-hmm. Tara and Jesus randomly have a bit of a moment because why not? They were feeling left out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that...
As long as nobody hugs Rosita, God damn it.
I thought it'd be so funny if Tara and Jesus have this, like, well, there's nobody else for us. They don't know each other's gay, and they decide, like, we're just going to try to make this work, and then they find out they're both gay. It's like a Gift of the Magi situation.
Okay.
Like, Tara knows she's gay, but you know what? I'm going to try to make with Jesus. Because we're the only ones here to have a moment with. And Jesus is like, I know I'm gay, but I'm going to make with this straight woman.
So
just
what's the end game on that?
I'm just saying, the reveal that, like, you know, they're both gay. And then they all laugh and, I don't know, brush each other's hair, whatever.
Sure.
I mean, Jesus got
He's got the hair. Yeah, he's got the hair for it.
I'd groom his beard. So,
I like this moment a lot. I think this is like a really...
Sure. It got me
a hopeful and positive way to end what has been a pretty damaging season, half season.
And I'm joking because, you know, some of this stuff was a little silly, but you know, Daryl giving Rick his 357 back had a lot of, like, Gandalf giving Theoden his sword in Lord of the Rings after he'd turned into a shriveled old man, like.
I don't remember.
God, you saw fucking Lord of the Rings.
I saw it. I didn't
leave me hanging. This isn't even fucking Harry Potter.
I know.
I know you saw these movies.
I didn't care enough. And also, I don't know who you're talking about.
Everyone else on the planet got it, so that's what's going to be important to me.
Yes, definitely.
Anyway,
it is.
It's good. And I, you know, I'm a sucker for Carl and Enid, and I thought, like, they're... I don't know. Carl's a little bit smug for how they left things, but, you know, whatever. It's young love. And, you know, Rick and Daryl getting back together is kind of like the beating heart of this show.
Right.
And
and Rick's now the leader again, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in all of these people's eyes.
He's got his right-hand man back.
Yeah. Giving him that gun was the symbol that says he's our leader again.
And they set this thing up. Like, you know, Rick, you know, when Negan is kneeling down in front in Rick's face and saying, I didn't just kill your right-hand man, did I? Well, no, he didn't. He just amputated it and took it back to the Savior compound, and now he's reunited, and, like, all this stuff is coming together, and they have this kind of heroic walking off into the camera that I'm a big fucking sucker, and I'm probably going to be let down, but I got pretty excited for next season.
Yeah, it's exciting.
You know, and I still, like, if I look back and I think, like, man, what if they didn't do that Tara bullshit, or what if, like, this season... It wouldn't have been great, but it would have been a lot more. It would have been a lot more engaging had they taken this kingdom stuff and just woven it through the rest of the plot.
Right.
And I can't see how anyone can look at these episodes where they've managed to successfully get, you know, see all this table being set and all these things coming into collision and how relatively exciting it was versus the complete momentum killer of the Terra episode and try to do this shit again. Like,
but
I hope they will. As you said, this is a damaging season, and I hope that they, if to the extent that the creative can tell even the most basic story, I hope that they can use this to kind of like beat down the suits and say, like, look, we lost like a third of our audience in a single season, and if we don't fucking turn up the heat a little bit, it's gonna keep being like this. And then who the fuck is gonna buy your Surfaces and your fucking Hyundais and your go see your goddamn movies and all that shit?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We have an after credit sequence.
Oh, right. Yes.
All is quiet on the Eastern Alexandria front. Father Gabriel is standing lookout, which, what the hell? Like, I like you, but I don't know if he's the one who should be standing night watch.
Yeah.
And Booty McBootface shows up with their oozing muddy boots. Oh, mm-hmm. My God. You know what this means, Jim?
What does it mean?
I don't know. I was hoping you would tell me because I fucking have no idea who this is supposed to be or represent.
It means whoever was at that boat complex, the nested boat society, has come up to the gates.
I just have a question. Why should I care? Well, I mean, maybe...
I don't know yet.
Maybe this is something to get the comic book people worked up because...
Oh, maybe.
To me, this is like a less exciting tease than the wolves. And the wolves ended up being kind of a minor fizzle themselves. They were just
were
just filler material to delay the coming of Negan. What the hell is this boot person going to be that's going to really mix things up as far as...
I don't know. I mean, I guess there's... So this is a cliffhanger that I'm cool with, right? Because it doesn't actually have much to do with anything that we've seen.
Right.
It's not like...
It's a tease for things to come.
Yeah, which is fine by me. I'm interested to see what the speculation is, you know, over the next 3 months or whatever until Walking Dead comes back.
Right.
Because I think there's going to be a lot of it.
Right. Well, I have a little bit of stuff I want to say about this in kind of the spoiler section, if we have a spoiler section for this week. But that's really all I have to say about the episode. You know, like most seasons, this had about 2 to 3 episodes of fat that could have been safely excised, and then the remaining stories woven together in a much more interesting fashion. And you would have had, if you did that, you would have had 8 regular length episodes that were pretty taut and interesting.
Right.
So can we learn this lesson? That's the big question going into season 7.5.
We'll see.
Before we get to feedback, once again, like to advertise the Club Bald Move. If you don't like advertising in your podcast, you can join up and make it go away. If you like to hear us talk and think, hey, I wonder what these guys would sound like talking about a bunch of other random stuff, we got you covered because we got bonus content. Right now we're doing the Badass Bald Move Christmas, where we're doing live watches and special podcasts on Christmas themed badass movies such as Rocky IV and Die Hard. This week is Jingle All the Way, the great Jake Lloyd Schwarzenegger contribution. Best, you can go to support.baldmove.com, join the club risk-free for 30 days and get access to all the content for free. And if you don't like it, cancel, and you can siphon all of our content and get away scot-free. Nothing we can do to stop you. We'll just be like, oh, it'll be like Negan. I want to bash your brains out, but for some mysterious reason, I can't do it. Uh-huh. I'm too damn hoarse, and my bat's too damn shot, and it's just not going to happen. So, yeah, it's risk-free. Try it. Support.baldmove.com. We do need your support. We're independent podcasters. We derive near all of our income through listener support. So if you do value the work we do here on The Walking Dead or on Westworld or Game of Thrones or Leftovers or Better Call Saul or anything that's coming up here in the late winter, spring, please help us at support.baldmove.com. Thanks.
All right, let's get into the feedback. We start off with Kelly T, who has some clarifications on the radios that we saw last episode.
Okay.
There was one kind of poking at a Michonne's bag on the ground.
And then, you know, Rick was looking at the one, yeah.
Yeah, she says, I'm pretty sure they were just trying to show the tension between Rick and Michonne about signing up for the Negan Mattress of the Month Club. Essentially, like, the argument they were having in this episode. is kind of shown because they both seem to ponder using the radios, but both decide not to.
I see.
They are each doing something the other would not approve of, Rick foraging for Negan, Michonne going after Negan, and this prompts them to opt out of checking in with each other.
This is the post-apocalyptic version of the rom-com trope where they're having an out and they're both looking at their cell phones, uh-huh. seeing if anyone called, but they're not. They're too proud to pick up the phone and call. Yeah, okay.
Right.
All right, yeah.
Pretty much. Patience B writes in with some comments on Bamboo. Bamboo in the South.
All right.
Southeast. Bamboo seems to be everywhere on the East Coast. You see it take over areas along highways and random neighborhoods all over.
No shit.
I can't speak for every state, but I have witnessed it in Pennsylvania, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, which makes me assume it is easily thriving in most eastern states. My neighbor planted some in his yard, and now the entire neighborhood is constantly chopping and poisoning it and trying to keep it from taking over their yards.
Jesus Christ.
Don't get me wrong. It's very useful to a point for certain things, but it's an incredibly resistant and strong runner with roots that, if blocked, will grow over flagstones and pavement until it finds earth to penetrate.
Wow. I feel like between kudzu and bamboo, like we've lost the South through vegetation.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have to come up with some serious chemicals to deal with it. She says, I love seeing that bamboo jungle because that is actually becoming a thing around here.
Huh.
And I often joke that we will need to start importing pandas to release into the wild to go with the bamboo forests.
Yeah, it's funny. Pretty like, good. You know, China's working on destroying their bamboo environment, mm-hmm. and we're creating, bring all your pandas over here.
It's just migrating.
Yeah.
Ralph from Brooklyn says, the more I think about the episode, the more questions I have. I'm guessing Michonne was on her way to find the saviors and wasn't going to tell Rick. If that's what she was planning, then she is really, really, really fortunate to have run into someone, some unidentified lone woman on the road with a car who also happened to be a member of Negan's gang.
And who's also suicidal, so she wanted to neatly tie her own plots up. Yeah.
Right. Unless this lone woman has Dwight-level trust from Negan, why would she be all out, be out all by herself, given how many people are available to go with her? Sending a team is not only safer, but it keeps possible deserters in check. I feel like the writers just didn't want Michonne to figure out how to find Negan, so they just sent her a driver.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very confusing to me as well. Sean H. says, you guys have been talking about how there are Walking Dead fans that don't listen to podcasts or view Reddit. I work at a hospital here in Houston, and every Monday morning on a nurse's unit, about 12 nurses and doctors come together at the beginning of the shift to talk about Sunday night's episode of The Walking Dead. I am the only one of this group that reads Reddit and listens to podcasts. Not a single one of these nurses or anyone else in that group complain about The Walking Dead the way people on Reddit, your listeners, or you do. They just talk about the stuff that happened on the show and why certain decisions were made and what they want to happen like other casual television fans would do.
Hmm.
They love the show. I take them as a group that represents the remaining 10 million people that keep up with and watch the show.
So, they're not idiots. I mean, we're talking about nurses and doctors here, so.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't say anything negative about them. Just
right.
They don't have the same complaints that people who, you know, really dig into this stuff do.
Yeah, I want to say it's not the show's fault that we take it more serious than it does, but it kind of was because, and also AMC continually positions itself as, you know, a serious drama.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, this is the only show of its caliber that I routinely watch.
Okay. Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Anything that's like that makes less sense than this is usually a comedy. So.
Oh, well, I watch worse stuff than this.
Like, I've been watching C-Lab 2021 because that's one of the things I missed out back in the day.
Sure.
Fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. And it's stupid as the day is long, mm-hmm. but that's the point.
Right.
Like, I sometimes feel like this Walking Dead, like, Rick tries to outdo the commander on C-Lab on occasion. And just like, what?
Yeah, he needs to be on Adult Swim or something because that's where it works.
Like, maybe 20 years from now, they'll make, like, a C-Lab version of The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Like, you
That'd
could,
be good.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, if they continue to be able to do, like, this Photoshop for audio and they continue to be able to do digital things with people's faces, like, imagine how much stock footage of Walking Dead is assembled where you could just tell these crazy ass stories and make up your own dialogue. And, yeah, that, I don't know, maybe that's something we got to look forward to in our old age.
I'm ready for it. Brett from Honolulu says, I was in Norway this past June at the Alesund Aquarium with my wife, waiting for a penguin show. I don't Okay. The lady in front of
me... Is that like a donkey show in Tijuana?
I think so.
Like a woman comes in and just gets just ravaged by emperor penguins.
We need to shut that shit down. Like from a worldwide abuse perspective.
The penguin
shows? Norwegian penguin shows need to go.
Yeah, no. They're infamous.
They are. You know what else is infamous? The lady in front of me who pulled out a 2-foot cucumber, took a few bites,
passed it
to her small child, who appeared to be 3 to 4 years old. I remember thinking, no way in hell. And the kid chomped down without hesitation, devouring the rest. I looked at my wife, and we both lost it with uncontrollable laughter. So yes, there are monsters in the world who eat raw cucumbers whole, the saviors and the Norwegians.
It's so funny, like, people's dietary things, because, like, you know, you hear about people eating French fries with mayonnaise, and it's like, oh my God, it's so gross, and then now we got the cucumber munchers, and then, but then, I remember, like, several Australians saying how repulsive they found my description of biscuits and gravy.
Really?
And I'm like, I guess that makes sense, because biscuits and gravy is just essentially grease-soaked flour that you mix with water, and then you pour over poorly baked, shitty bread. So,
which is just
that's
flour
just garbage
and
food. That's just garbage food. That's what garbage people would eat. So I mean,
oh, but it's delicious.
Yeah, it's that's the thing.
And I don't have a problem with cucumbers.
I don't.
It's just
I like
the
cucumbers.
Way you eat cucumbers. Like if you let's say if you had biscuits and gravy,
you're
going to
pull out a room temperature 2-foot long cucumber and start eating it.
It's weird.
It is weird.
If you had biscuits and gravy and you said like, oh, hand me those biscuits, that biscuits and gravy, and like literally put them into your hands and started eating them
like if you saw in America, you're at a dolphin show, which is another thing that needs to be shut down.
Yep.
And someone just got out like a Ziploc bag full of biscuits and gravy and starts, you would be like, that's fucking weird. Like there's a way to eat that that's acceptable. Maybe it's not my cup of tea, but.
Or they took the bag and they like mashed it all up to like a slurry and then just started piping it into their mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be disgusting.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, Norwegians in your cucumber eating.
He says, FYI, I love Norway and have nothing bad to say about the Norwegian people.
They do seem like they have their shit together. Maybe that's maybe we should all eat cucumbers by the foot.
I'm willing to try it. I'm willing to try it. Whenever I do my mukbang video, it's going to be all...
It's all going to be cucumbers.
Raw temperature, raw room temperature
cucumbers. You can set the record
cucumbers.
For linear feet of cucumbers eaten in a single mukbang. Like you roll out 7 3-footers. I'm going to go for 21 feet today. 21 feet of cucumber.
Oh, what would that do to my stomach?
I don't... Because that's the thing. Like, cucumbers have almost zero nutritional value. They're essentially like water, and that's it.
You think you hit the LD50 of water before you like... How many feet of cucumber would it take?
I don't know. Maybe 21 foot would do it. I encourage you to try it. No.
Oh, all right. So Kevin writes in and says, dudes, can they make Maggie look any less pregnant? She's thin as a rail. How fucking long ago are we supposed to think she got pregnant?
Yeah.
And the answer is, I don't know. I really don't know. I feel like there is an answer to that question. But I don't remember when they last banged. And B...
Right.
I couldn't tell you how much time has passed, even if I remembered it.
Right. I mean, it's you. I've seen women not show for like the first into second trimester
for a very long time.
Right. But now I feel like it's like less common for really thin women for Matt because like you know you'll start to notice the bulge earlier than that. But
right.
I don't know, man. I just looked it up. A cup of cucumbers has 16 calories.
Wow.
A cup.
That's a pretty good snack.
Yeah.
It'll fill you up, but it won't.
Yeah.
Won't make you.
Ooh, there's a quantity. You can actually define the quantity as one cucumber, and it specifies an 8 1/4 inch cucumber, 47 calories.
Wait, but what's the girth? What are we talking?
Well,
circumference.
It's 301 grams. You'd have to do math, and I'm not going to do that. But you know, an average. So that woman packing like with the 2-foot cucumber is like not even getting 100 calories.
Well, her kid.
You're just bored of me. You're just grazing. That's just grazing.
Right. Yeah, that's a great snack. All right, Dan from Phil, just chop it up.
I bet it's calorically negative because your body spends more calories digesting it than you actually get out of the cucumber itself.
Maybe so. In that case, bad apocalypse food, can I say?
That's why the Norwegians are so fit. Famous for being fit.
Dan from Philly says, the same old story, mid-season finale, and while the episode is perfectly serviceable, maybe even good... It's also 6 weeks too late. From the Daryl and Jesus road trip, how did they get out of the gates? Oh, yeah, who cares, right?
They fired up that loud-ass motorcycle just right out the front gates.
No one could hear him. The music was too loud. The hate music. Yet another member of the group taken hostage after a poor decision by someone else. Negan's ballistic expertise, the prerequisite killing of peripheral characters, you can just see the writers checking off the boxes. Has there ever been a series just so goddamn predictable? I can't help but think the creators are so bankrupt of ideas that AMC will just run this money train till it dies and quality be damned. Well, I mean, I don't know if you're right, I don't know if you're wrong, but that's certainly an opinion. And one that we have times have pondered ourselves.
Sure.
Aaron S. says, The Walking Dead did what they do best. Roping me into watching the second half of the season just wasn't when I was ready to jump off the Walking Dead bandwagon. I mean, I can't speak today. I definitely understand how Aaron felt at the end of the live watch. Very torn and oddly optimistic after this crap show of a season. I hope it lives up to the expectations they set, but deep down, I know I'll be disappointed until the finale. We always bash the writers and producers of this show for lack of talent, but it has to be talent keeping people roped into this show for this long, right? I mean
that is
if your talent,
skill set,
talent is manipulating the public, sure. Is it enjoyable to participate in, though?
That's what it's like. It's one of those things where, you know, it's easier to actually work than it is to appear busy at a job. Like,
right.
I'd much rather be busy than trying to act
yeah.
busy. At some level, isn't just creating an entertaining television show with this much talent around it easier than fucking with people?
You would think so.
Like,
I mean, if that's what you enjoy, though,
but you
just
got
fucking with people.
How many nurses and doctors are you going to argue with?
Hmm?
Like, maybe people like this precisely because it doesn't challenge them, you know?
Maybe.
I don't know. That's my depressing thought of the day.
Caitlin T. says, classic Walking Dead logic equals we hid Maggie in a closet and risked our lives to make sure the saviors thought she was dead. So before we put her on fence duty and make sure her face is the first thing anyone sees when driving up, give her a hat? No one will know.
That's what we were joking on the live watch last night. Every single time she was looking over, we joked that like Negan was there. Hey, Maggie, I remember you.
Right.
Yeah, hot girl is supposed to be dead. Time to bash some people's brains in. Now it's like, for fucking real?
Yeah.
You're going to be on fence. You're going to be on front gate duty when you are supposed to be hiding out in this community.
And I just can't.
For the protection of Alexandria and mm-hmm. the Hilltop, because they'll both get reprisals.
And
I
your
thought
unborn
you were
child and yourself. Like
I thought your plot was that you were guilty because everyone died because of you. Because that's why. I mean, like, what the fuck? What the fuck?
Yeah, and the idea that they don't like the saviors don't have scouts out there just keeping watch.
Yeah.
Over these civilizations.
If
over
I was
these
Negan,
locations.
I would have some kind of fucking sympathizer on the inside of every one of these communities, just
right.
hanging out.
Yeah. Or at the very least, people outside the gates watching.
Yeah, like a garrison. Like there's
yeah.
a couple of saviors just keeping an eye on. That's that.
They
fact,
have
that
the people.
Dumb.
They have the men.
That seems dumb that there's not like a barracks of saviors in every fucking community. Like,
sure.
Like you go in and we're going to take a few of you hostage and then we're going to leave a few of us behind.
Right.
So if there's any kind of skullduggery.
We'll know about it.
Exactly. Or if these guys all show up dead, then we're also going to know. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, man, that's kind of a.
Yeah,
big deal.
He's just not a very good strategist, I guess.
Maybe that's the plot that, like, you know, that like Negan's not really that smart.
Well, I mean, our community in Alexandria is going to have to be able to outsmart him. But if he doesn't
and
feel,
we know they're not that smart.
Well, that's true. But if he doesn't feel like he's capable and intelligent and a formidable adversary, then
yeah.
why is that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I will say that I do feel like he does feel that way. But when you stop and think about it, it's like, huh.
He could feel definitely more that way.
Right. But on the other hand, I don't know. If they actually did garrison these places, it's just game over.
Seems like
it,
yeah.
you can make a situation too airtight where it's like, okay, once you got Rick's bullets and all of his guns and all of his best people and there's six of the Neganite enforcers, like, what are you going to do?
I don't know. The cracks are much smaller.
I mean, I think there's
scenario.
An interesting. I could see a season of like this underground resistance type of fighting. You
right.
know, like that's
yeah.
the thing. Like I was saying when there was like, oh, what are we going to do? I'm like, crack a history book. Like, look up the French Resistance. There's all kinds of things you can fucking do.
Yeah.
You
for
know?
Sure.
And that stuff is pretty interesting. There's been many movies and television shows made about it.
I bet there's a Who's the Boss episode about
probably. It. Probably. Go watch some old Hogan Heroes. See there how you can go. Effectively fight a resistance against a fascist regime.
I know there are MacGyver episodes about it.
Of course. You got to build. You take that bamboo that's rampant and build a whole air force of ultralights.
Yep.
Then what are you going to do, Negan?
Yep.
Just drop rocks on them, Ewok style.
All right. Nathan E. says, a couple of things here. One, I like that our group has their fighting spirit back, but I'm left curious as to why Rick feels differently now. The deaths of Glenn and Abraham left him utterly defeated, but the deaths of Spencer and Olivia and a pep talk from Shona what put him in full-on revenge mode? Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about this.
I do think that he, like...
The scales have been tipping, and now they've tipped to the point where it makes sense.
Well, right. Like, we had a deal. Like, mm-hmm. You brutalized us to prove your point. I got behind that point, and I got all my people on the same page. But now Rick's appreciating that either he can't, you know, that the indomitable human spirit of Alexandria was going to eventually get them in trouble, or... Mm-hmm.
This is Lando with Darth Vader.
Yeah, this deal keeps getting worse every time.
Yeah.
So eventually you got to tell Lobot to go take the stormtroopers and lock him in the Northern Tower and keep it quiet.
Right. And number two, Deanna's dying wish was for Rick to watch over Spencer and help him grow as a man, which amounted to fuck all. Rick has a terrible track record of trying to help other people's children survive, but I'm glad they nipped this storyline in the bud. Otherwise, Spencer would have had... the same plot line as the kid who shot Carl in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see that. Though there is a part of me that would have liked to see Spencer live on, get proficient with that compound bow he found, and in some small way, we'd still have a remnant of Deanna in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that we didn't really comment on. Everyone in that family is dead now.
Yeah.
There are no more of the
Deannaites. The Munros. The Munros are gone.
Yes.
Reg, Aiden, Deanna...
It's unfortunate.
And now Spencer.
There was at least one of them I liked.
Yep.
You can debate
none of
who.
I bet none of them are going to be on the Wall of Fame.
No. None of them get their name up there. Topher T. says, there have been two assassination attempts on Negan, and by the time they get back to the power plant, they will find out that Daryl has killed another savior and escaped. I'm not sure if Michonne killed that woman or not. If she did, well, she did. It would most likely raise suspicion at the very least. This from a group that wiped out one of the Savior's outposts last season. I have to ask, what did the previous group of Saviors... what did the previous group the Saviors killed last season have to do to get slaughtered?
right?
I mean, they all tried to kill him? Like, an organized effort?
That was the library, right? The library compound?
I think that was Oceanside is what they were talking about.
Oh, and then so that was the library group that, because they used to be holed up in a library, remember?
Is that what they said?
I thought so.
Okay.
They showed them but that's a good question, and maybe you're supposed to.
I think they said that, yeah, like all of them tried to go kill Negan or slaughtered a bunch of their people, but.
But they were clearly put, I mean, now I see this as like they were pushed into it, because if you try mm-hmm. to do everything right by the Negan's, by the Savior's lights, you're still going to get fucked. And that's the thing, I don't know. Like, totalitarian regimes work on the threat of fear and judicious use of force.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone should be paranoid and afraid all the time.
Right.
But you shouldn't be, like, just randomly killing people, or else it makes it that much easier to resist because you got nothing to lose.
And you have to give them rules to follow if you want.
Yeah.
If you want compliance.
Right.
So... when there are no rules and they don't know how to comply and they can't comply, well, they're only left with one option. That's
right.
To rebel.
Right. I mean, it's one thing if you want to get them all in a fucking concentration camp, but if you actually want them out autonomously providing for you,
right?
You got to have some rules and you got to live by them as well.
Nathan E. says, if you were Maggie, would you be skeptical of eating that apple pie after seeing the one guy in town who doesn't like you fiddling with fruit earlier in the episode? I
bet the legend of Maggie is like, oh, she likes apples, better make her an apple pie.
Well, yeah, as a nice gesture, but I could also see, like, this might be coming from Gregory, who
sure.
I just took the apple from earlier
sure.
this episode.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't trust that apple pie.
Uh-huh.
Then again, they had this big, long scene about her being pregnant and just eating everything and, like...
And also, Maggie's got
roll your eyes
superhuman
bad.
Ability. Like, I think she'd smell the bleach in it if there was.
Right.
She smelled an apple pie through, like, a locked door, so...
Yeah.
her magic pregnancy powers.
And then he mentions the hat homage to Glenn, which we kind of picked up on.
The other, we didn't talk about this, but Norman Reedus, or Daryl, when he was busting out, he was also dressed. Someone did a split screen of it on Reddit, and like, same checkered.
In
like,
his Kurt Cobain outfit?
Yeah, he's like, same checkered, like, flannel shirt with the t-shirt and the hat. Like, he was dressed exactly like season one Glenn.
Oh, okay.
That's got to be an homage to not just to Steven Yeun, mm-hmm. and as well as the actual character.
Yeah. Matt S. says, I've been holding back with feedback this season because I didn't want to sound like the guy calling a sports talk station after a 45-3 loss. Now that I've seen this half of the season as a whole, my response is, welp, and just a shrug. We are back on the farm looking for Sophia, the prison after the governor massacred his army, or hell, they even padded out the Hunter's arc, too. This is what this show does. I should have suspected something in episode one when we had to wait a half hour to see who was killed last season. Maybe I'm in the minority because I'm a comic reader, so I know what is coming, and I'm constantly disappointed when we don't get there. These 90-minute episodes are just making it worse. I was waiting for Spencer's gutting last episode, and of course I didn't get it. They needed it for the finale. I know you probably don't agree with this because you, at the end of the live watch, were shocked at how much... They brought it around at the end.
But precisely because, like, I read the comic spoiler thread on Reddit, and there was a lot of people bitching and moaning about the pace, which I was oblivious to because it's been five. I lost a lot of the fine details, and I was impressed that they essentially, I don't want to talk about too much stuff in a non-spoiler section, but I just felt like they collapsed a lot of comic book material and advanced the plot a lot, like a shocking amount in this one episode.
Right.
Where you've got, like, they could pretty much tell, they could do a hurry up, you know, one or two episodes to show everyone kind of binding together and then just fight the war and be done with this. But I don't think they will. I really do think next year, I don't know how they're going to do it. But they're going to fucking keep the stuff up in the air enough that they're going to put off the actual war with Negan till season 8. Like, when they all out, they go and go hammer and tongs. But I don't know. Like,
okay.
You know,
is this a little too spoilery for the main cast?
I don't think so, because they're, like, talking about fighting Negan. So
yeah, I mean, it's clear at the end that they are going to mount up.
Right.
Right? It's not... And it's going to be probably a slow mount. They're going to take their time getting up on that horse, but they're going to do it.
Right. Right.
So, okay.
So, I was impressed by how much they got to the end and how much they hurried up towards the end there. But if you are a close reader of the comics, then you might have, like, I can't help but think, that's what always annoyed me. And it was like all the constant remixes. And it would be one thing if they remixed it and like, okay, well, that's better. Or I can see that working better for television. But so many of those remixes I just thought were different for the sake of different. And inferior to the actual things that happen in the comic books. Hmm. Getting enough distance has made a lot of those objections go away. So
okay.
That's one of the reasons I've stayed the hell away.
Right, right. Dan from Chicago says, they did it again. I was getting tired of all the bottle episodes and not looking forward to this episode at all. But then Daryl broke free. Maggie got her swag back. Michonne got wise of the extent of the threat. I'm thinking extant.
Extant, yeah.
Halle Berry's bad TV show. Mm-hmm. And Rick got his, you're messing with the wrong people, pants on. I'm glad the two civilizations are connected again. I would have liked the kingdom to make contact, but now I'm geared up for the second half of the season.
That's
so
coming.
Yeah, right. They didn't make contact, but the seeds have been planted, right? Like, I can see Morgan saying, look, I'm not going to help, but I know people who might.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody can convince Ezekiel to get in the game, it's probably Rick.
Sure.
I mean, look at he can just say, here's all the people we've lost already to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't stick with his agreements, all sorts of stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, I think they're sowing the seeds of discontent in all of these communities simultaneously well enough for me to believe that at some point they're going to come together and maybe, you know, band together to do what one of them couldn't do alone. He says, but by no means was this a perfect episode. Poor editing on Spencer being stabbed and Rosita shooting Lucille. Just poor jumpy cuts. No drama to it. And why would every single one of Negan's henchmen not shoot Rosita immediately? Are they supposed to know she only had one round and it was okay to take the time to tackle her?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Why did we check in with Carol and Morgan to learn nothing new? And I don't know the Kingdom soldier's name, so I certainly don't care about him crying in his camper. Why do Sasha and Enid argue about if Maggie can handle the secret of Jesus' mission only to have him show up with Daryl 20 minutes later? Yeah, that's, you know, that's a fair point. Like, this seems like a waste of time.
Yeah, but they also, in a situation where Sasha should care about, like, if Maggie doesn't care about a ripped uterus, Sasha should.
Right.
So, like, I didn't mind that. Like, that seems like a, you know, like, hey, I'm just exploring my options, and I don't need to get Maggie all excited because she's supposed to be on bed rest. Like, that makes sense to me.
Okay. What was the trigger that convinced Rick that peace isn't an option? That was entirely unclear. I don't know that I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that just the capricious nature of justice and the fact that, like, you're just going to accept that one of your people are going to get the piss beaten out of them for no fucking reason?
Every other week,
like, that
or
shit,
something.
Yeah, like, you know, you're going to, like, let some guy go blind because some guy decided he wanted to work someone over. Yeah. You know, that's the fatal error of Negan's ways. Like, it'd be one thing if it was just an academic or philosophical question about what it means to be free and are we free, and it's kind of like, you know, a Boston Tea Harbor thing. It's like, you know.
Uh-huh.
But this was like, no, like standing up to tyranny and literal slavery and, like, just being treated like, you know, garbage by these people.
Sure. I wouldn't want to live under that.
No.
He also wonders if any people at all live in the hilltop. I know the final scene was about getting our gang back together, but it would be nice if more than Jesus and one of the lookouts lived there.
Mm-hmm.
Pay for 8 extras. I'll do it for free. Says, keep up the good work. Please keep podcasting. I'd rather hear your thoughts after each episode than dive into the depths of Reddit or Twitter. I don't blame you. Aaron P. says, I'll start by saying, I don't know what to call this person besides the boot guy. Cheesy as it is.
Should be the boot girl. Especially
right.
If it's an Oceansider.
Well, buckle up, buckle your boots, because here comes a theory.
Uh-oh.
The boot guy is the Kingdom lieutenant who wants to go to war against the Saviors. I think Richard.
Huh.
The way the boot guy was portrayed in this episode indicates some sort of Alexandria foe, likely the owner of the houseboat seeking vengeance for the theft of all his belongings. However, I highly doubt that someone who went through all the trouble of situating himself in a zombie moat with several layers of signage warning people of their immediate death for trespassing would idly watch his livelihood be stolen. The lieutenant knows that the Kingdom needs numbers to successfully fight the Saviors. If the boot guy is him, his observations of Rick and Aaron probably tentatively confirm to him that others are also having to collect for the Saviors, meaning there are more people out there who might be able to recruit. Checking out Alexandria is a reasonable next step to confirming that the Saviors are holding other communities to a similar shitty deal. That said, Kirkman and Gimple love audience trolling, in addition to all the other reasons she mentioned. So I bet that they purposely set up the lieutenant's stalking of Rick and Aaron and the trespass into Alexandria as nefarious, even though it isn't.
The only thing I don't like about that is the way this is edited together. I'm pretty sure that Richard was talking to Carol and Morgan at the same time that I think that counts for something.
I have no idea. Yeah.
That counts for something. Like, I don't think you can weave the storylines together, and I know something the Westworld is successfully able to do, but they did a whole lot of development of that concept. But
well,
I don't think you can play. Yeah, they do that too, and they're like, yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? It's like we're telling a story
right.
That's global and all over the world, and it's happening all kinds of different times, and
even within the same episode, like
yeah.
You'll have.
Boy, you got me wriggling in the the crushing grip of reason there, Jim. I don't know how I can excuse one and overlook the other.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean,
that's the only thing I don't like about it, though, is like I feel like the language of cinematography says that was happening simultaneously.
Right. Yeah, I guess. Do we see this guy's boots? Do we know if he's got those little inlays?
I don't know if we've seen this. And plus, it's like his laces were braided around. Like, did you notice, like, the laces were, like, wrapped around several times before they were tied off with the boot?
Huh.
Boots
are too big? Laces are too
laces
long?
Laces too long? Isn't that a thing?
What does that say?
I got that there was, like, some type of boots are designed to do that, to give you more, like, high ankle support.
Probably, yeah.
But, I mean, they're very distinctive boots, so, like, I feel like if I saw them again, they had some kind of leather flourish. But, yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen Richard's boots that close.
Yeah, I certainly haven't noticed it.
But I don't like it because, again, it seemed like they were specifically saying these things are contemporaries of each other and no evidence that they weren't. So,
okay. Josh F. in the final email says, "You guys keep saying that Negan is going to punish Alexandrians for Daryl's actions, but we've yet to see it with this situation. I'm not saying you're wrong in that this is a general premise he's used for other situations within the group, but I'm just not seeing it here with Daryl now that he's taken Daryl for his own." So I don't think this is dry pie. I think he mentions, you know, that he escaped. But he says, "It seems like Negan no longer thinks of Daryl as being part of the Alexandria group and isn't trying to use his relationship or his other relationships to threaten Daryl into being subservient. Daryl is no longer a part of Rick's group, nor is he Rick's responsibility, unless Daryl did go back to Alexandria and they tried to hide him. To me, the only people getting punished for this will be Negan's men who let him escape. And what point would it make anyway to kill an Alexandrian because of someone who is no longer part of their group and not Rick's responsibility escaping Negan's compound? Prove what point? That his men are inept? Of course, this all seems to be a moot point now that they all seem to be rebelling against Negan anyhow. I imagine they won't even go back to Alexandria unless it's to get a better fortified position." I don't know that I agree with that last statement, but yeah, I mean, I guess what... So the guy escapes on his own volition, right? Like,
seems like.
Well, potentially, I mean, someone, with the help of the people inside your own compound.
Although someone or pointed out Jesus. That's, I'm saying, no right. one, we haven't talked about that. There is an outside chance that this was all engineered by Jesus.
But he wouldn't know that, right? He would no. assume,
and also,
my
Jesus,
guys are idiots.
Right. And also Jesus didn't seem like, when he came across Daryl, that this is like all according to my plan. It's more like, oh my God, it's Daryl.
Now, if they go back to Alexandria and Negan shows up and Daryl just greets him with a smile at the gates,
right.
there's going to be hell to pay.
Right.
But, so they either have to hide Daryl or not go back to Alexandria.
But the whole point of killing someone in Alexandria is not, you know, that Alexandria, it's the fact that Daryl was from Alexandria. He knew the stakes, and yeah, he got away scot-free, but I'm going to kill one of you. Because that's then...
It's so that if you imprison someone, they won't try to leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they know what's like, going to happen to their friends.
Yeah, I guess I completely disagree with the analysis that he can get away with letting that happen because without looking weak and without the whole system crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Then again, this is a man who doesn't kill the person who tried to kill him.
Right.
So... I don't know what his rationales are.
Yeah.
But that's it for emails.
Okay. Well, I have like a little bit of spoiler stuff to talk about.
Okay, I have like one or two things. One which actually makes a lot of sense and is pretty interesting.
But our contact info, if you want to send feedback, is watchingdead@baldmove.com or on the forums.baldmove.com if you just want to shoot the shit with your fellow fans.
Yeah. We will be back, like we said, on Friday for a wrap-up, a season mid-season wrap-up cast.
Yep.
So if you want to get your feedback in, send it in before Friday morning because that's when it's all happening. And, you know, we'll consider our coverage of The Walking Dead over the next 3 months or so and see what we want to continue to do for this show now that Aaron is super psyched again for the next season. Now they've roped him back in. And we'll let you know. Let you know how it goes. And until next week, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See you.
And we're back with the spoiler section. I have two emails. Is there anything you desperately wanted to talk about before we get to them?
Yeah, I like to kind of like take point here a little bit. I mean, so the reason I'm kind of at a hopeful place is because my recollection is there. You had the, you know, introduction to Negan where Glenn got his brains beat out. Mm-hmm. And then you had this long interim period. And then you had, I think it was called the March to War, which was where the communities all got together and decided they were going to do this, and you had all-out war, which signified the actual open rebellion. And there's a lot of cool things in between there, and then during the war that I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I'm in a hopeful place is because I guess my recollection was that this pre-war period lasted a lot longer even in the comics.
Gotcha.
So for them to go like
gut Spencer and have, like, in the comics, Maggie is the one, or not Maggie, I'm sorry, Andrea is the one that went to Rick and's like, what the fuck? How mm-hmm. can we continue to let this happen? And Rick unveils that, like, look, and that's the thing I guess I don't like, or I'm struggling to put into context for my memories, because in the show, it seems like Rick completely bought into Negan's system.
Yeah.
And everyone else convinced him, where in the comics, Rick only did that because he thought that if he let on for a minute that he was planning for resistance, it would get more people killed.
Mm-hmm.
And until he had everything figured out, that he wanted to keep that all in kind of close to his vest. So it's kind of like Rick in the TV show is like, I now know that this is intolerable and I can't put up with it, versus the comic book where you find out that I've always known. I've been waiting for my moment.
Yeah,
and I don't know about that.
That's interesting. So in the comic, I feel like the focus is more on Rick as the central figure in this whole thing, whereas in the show, maybe it's more of a sense of community.
Maybe.
Like, maybe that's the idea they're going for. They know they're not going to have Andrew Lincoln forever. They know that Rick can't be the only thing that you latch on to as a viewer.
Right.
We need the community to bring him around on this.
I mean, I guess that's what I'm afraid of, is I feel like if they wanted to have an excuse, they could drag out this next half season, and then season 8 is the all-out war, and then they flash forward a few years, in which case they can recast.
Right.
Rick can be killed off. Daryl can be killed off. They recast. They recast Carl, or give Chandler Riggs a Godfather offer to come back and reprise his role.
Mm-hmm.
And then they keep telling, and they rebuild around, you know, the likes of Eugene and Maggie, and I don't even know if Lauren Graham is available, or what Danai Gurira has got going on in the rest of her life. Like, how many of these people can they keep, and how many people can they, you know, take and rebuild? Because, like, you know, post All Out War, like, Negan's a big deal. Like, he still continues to be a figure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Dwight continues to be a big deal. They introduced these Whisperers, which that's the other thing, is I'm wondering if these boots are not supposed to be the Whisperers. Because I thought one of their deals was that they actually infiltrate some of these large communities and take advantage of the fact that not everyone really knows everybody.
Hmm. Okay.
But I could be wrong about that, because I stopped reading around that time.
Yeah. I mean, there could be Whisperers in Alexandria for all I know. I don't know half the Alexandrians.
Right, right. So I don't know, because, like, the other thing is that could be Oceanside, because clearly you've got a situation where, you know, Rick and the Hilltop have got badasses, but no weaponry. The Hilltop is just ready to go, and then you've got Oceanside that could provide the arms,
right,
for these guys that are willing to fight. And, like, that all together could maybe take Negan's place, but with the element of surprise. But yeah, I don't know. Also, in the comics, like, Eugene doesn't get, like, Eugene makes that's so in the comics, everyone's out of bullets. So everyone's kind of gone back to spears and bow and arrows and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Eugene figures out how to make ammunition, and that's, like, a huge advantage for Alexandria. And then, yeah, I think Negan eventually takes him prisoner, but
he does. I mean, Matt S. says that Eugene apparently famously quips, like, I'm not going to make ammo for you no matter how many genitals you sever.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay, sure.
Right.
Pretty good.
Well, there's this really cool scene where the Saviors use bow and arrows, and, like, spears have been dipped in zombie guts.
Yeah, yeah.
To do this, what looks like an ineffectual attack on Alexander, where, like, some people get arrows and some people get nicked up, and but, like, you know, they're repelled. And, you know, the doctor tends to their wounds, and then a bunch of people turn into zombies and go on a little Manny rampage.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But it's why would it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Or
it could be reversed.
That's
they
the
could
thing,
do it
but
to,
like,
Negan.
That is like watching good guys use chemical weapons. Yeah. Like, that's something you expect an evil person would do. But
it's like watching good guys use chemical weapons against the bad guys,
which is still
Is that okay?
Well, I mean, it's The Walking Dead, so, like, they can definitely do it, but I'm just saying, mm-hmm, like, it does feel like the good guys are stooping to the bad guys' level.
It's all out war.
Which, again, it's all out war, and it's The Walking Dead, so I wouldn't be mad. It's just, it's a weird remix to do.
Right, and it's kind of one of the eternal questions of The Walking Dead, specifically when it comes to, like, Carol and Morgan at this
right.
point, right? Richard is essentially asking them to do that, to preemptively strike.
Yeah, preemptive war.
Yeah.
Based on what your worst fear would happen, which
right.
is not a great way to govern in general.
Sure. We have a pretty interesting email from Sandy A, who wants to comment about this key card that we found, or that Tara found.
The Triple P.
Yeah, the Triple P. She says
Pizza Palace.
Pizza Palace is actually a term used in music for whispering or playing very softly.
Oh, shit.
It's like pianissimo, yeah, I think is the term for it. Are we going to see Heath at a later date with the Whisperers? That's interesting. So might they be slowly introducing the concept of the Whisperers?
Could be. In which case, it's probably one of the more successful slow burns a show's ever done.
Yeah. It's certainly made people wonder and question.
Could Heath, because that's the other thing, is Heath's kind of recent nihilism, maybe that is, like, you're going to reintroduce to Heath later and he's a Whisperer now. Because that seems like that's, like, the Whisperers are one of those communities that take the lessons of the zombie apocalypse to its logical conclusion, where they have become, they're not what you would call a recognizable human community. They're like the Terminus, you know, like they've, they fundamentally changed the nature of how they see themselves as humans and the other survivors in it. So, like, I guess that would be interesting that, like, that Heath would become, like, we never saw Alexander or one of Rick's groups, like, talk to the wolves and be like, hey, man, you're onto something.
Right.
I don't know that Heath's a strong enough character that a lot of people give a shit about that, but that's something interesting they could do.
Yeah, and then, you know, reintegrating him into Alexandria would be a good way to get a Whisperer in the gates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Like a stealth Whisperer, even for the audience, maybe.
Were Heath's boots tied fancy? Did anybody know?
I didn't see his boots. No. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, are the Whisperers music fans? Is that what's going on here? Why the PPP? Is this going to be the symbol of the Whisperers?
I mean, that could be, like, yeah.
Like somebody just knew that from before the world went to shit.
Yeah.
It was like, hey guys, it'd be cool if we did this.
Right.
Okay. Maybe so. That's all I got.
Okay.
Spoilers.
No, I was trying to think of a clever way because, like, I remember when we started Bald Move before we got big, like, back when we were just doing the Blue Yonder, we had a lot of, like, sitting around in my living room joking about, like, what we'd do if we got famous and, like, all the fucking weird lies we'd tell about inside jokes and, like,
and the name of the company.
Yeah, the name of the company and how we derived it and, like, how much fun that would be. And I'm like, yeah. I guess, like, to the extent that happens, maybe the Whisperers got like that too. It's like, hey, let's just drop PPP because it stands for PNSMO or whatever, and that's like Whisper, which is what we do. And
right,
yeah, maybe they're that up their own ass.
And if you ever ask them about it, it's like, no, that's the Pizza Palace.
Yeah, it's Pizza Palace.
That's where we're headquartered.
Used to be, yeah, one of us used to drive a delivery truck for Pizza Palace. What?
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it.
Pete's penis packing. Pete's packing a penis. Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to think of what other it could stand for. But it's always Pete. Pete's always in a mix.
Yeah, Pete and Pete, perfection.
Pete, triple Pete, perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, so I guess we'll be back Friday for the wrap-up. And
we
also,
will.
I started a little thread on the forum because I kind of wanted to see if everybody else was feeling me on maybe what they would do in the future. And I started a Season 7B comic spoilers speculation thread. So
okay.
Jump up on there if you got any ideas because I'd like to farm that maybe for some content on Friday.
Cool. All right, well, we'll see you guys then.
See ya.